but you let me know.
Oh, cool.
And so.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Like, okay.
Yeah, yeah. All right. And then we leave it there.
I think you'd be too nervous, yeah, like you said. No.
Boom, and we're live. UFC motherfucking bantamweight champion TJ Dillashaw and Dwayne Ludwig.
How you doing, Mr.
Master
Logan?
Splinter? What's up, buddy? Good to see you, man.
Good to see you.
You got golf shirts now, too. Look at you, you respectable motherfucker.
I'm 40 now.
Oh, you got to be respectable.
I got to step up my game.
Yeah.
People walk into the dojo and he's got to look dressed to the nines, you know, looking like it's the job.
But there's a warning sign on the wall. It says explicit language.
Oh, so you let people know. People are going to be swearing up in this bitch.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Line up, motherfuckers. Let's go. Bow on the mat first, though.
Do you say that when you teach classes? Do you swear during
your
classes?
So I get into it. Yeah, I'm passionate.
Yeah. No, you are. Yeah. You get fired up.
Yes, that's why I don't teach the kids. We have a separate room for the kids' classes.
That's
Coach Sam Kutz runs
that.
Yeah.
That's so you have a children's program?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Dude, I love the fact that you take regular classes. Mm-hmm. I watch you on the Instagram.
Yeah.
Bantamweight champion of the world.
Oh, yeah.
Regular classes with regular people. I see them in there with you like, holy shit.
Yeah.
All starstruck and weirded out, going through drills.
I love it. I love, I mean, obviously, none of his classes are regular, though. You know,
right.
Even if you're an average Joe coming off the street, like Dwayne's teaching you the same shit that I'm doing.
Right.
You know, but yeah, working out with a guy that's never had a real fight before, you know, I mean, he'll always remember that. You know, he'll always get to work out with me. So It's cool, man. I like doing it. And especially at Dwayne's gym, too. It kind of shows like the true love that I have for the system and being in there.
Yeah, I mean, what kind of fucking sport other than MMA is that even possible?
Good point. Yeah,
right?
If it's controlled.
Jiu-jitsu, you could do that. But most people don't know who the jiu-jitsu guys are. I mean, you're fighting on fucking television all the time.
Yeah. And it's almost too easy to have that happen in this sport.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Right.
To where, like, there's people you shouldn't be sparring with that it happens. You know, that's why a controlled environment's awesome. That's why, like, I feel like the small kind of training camps and teams have been so beneficial because you know exactly who you're working out with and who you're getting better with. But there are times to work out with the average guys, you know, not when I'm getting ready for a fight or don't want to get hurt, you know, kind of thing. And then his is a very controlled system when we're doing Dutch drills that you're not going to go crazy.
You know, there's so many different approaches to training fighters.
Yes, sir.
And you obviously have hit. Well, you guys have, like, the best fighter-trainer relationship that I know about. Because you guys are so tight. Mm-hmm. It's like you guys are really a team. Whereas there's always some weird animosity with fighters and trainers. And the blow-ups are just like men and women. Like, when men and women break up and you fucking bitch, you know, you fucking.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that happens.
Yes,
with that makes me so sad when I see, like, fighter-trainer blowouts. Mm-hmm. When they separate and talk shit about each other. Like, God, that's such a bummer.
I think it's both of them have too big of an ego. One wants to be, like, the coach, maybe coaching the fighter, wants to be more popular or whatever it may be, you know. I don't know, whenever Dwayne came into the gym and as soon as he was there from the first practice, I knew we were going to get along. He's a crazy motherfucker. He likes to go hard, competitive, and that was kind of like everything I do, you know.
But you have a very, very well thought out system.
Yes, sir.
I was very impressed with like just your documentation of your system, how you have all these different things worked out. Like, these aren't like just I mean, there's obviously creativity involved when an actual fight is happening. But your system is so well thought out and so comprehensive.
I feel that's what I'm supposed to be doing, is organizing the chaos of a fight so that the regular person can understand what's happening. When I was fighting and training, fighting was scary. And you know, I was very scared of it. So I wanted to make sure I understood what was going on. So I just started mapping it out. And a lot of that came from Sensei Rutan, because he had the number system of, you know, three was jab, cross, hook, rather than three just being the left hook. So he sparked the initial interest to just start categorizing everything, put things into a system, and it helped out. And
but you don't
be
sleep.
Successful.
He thinks about it nonstop. He doesn't sleep.
There's only
one
way to
great. I'll get a text message in the middle of the night when we're coming up to a fight, and like it'd be like 12, 1 o'clock, and it's even if he's in Colorado, it's 2 o'clock for him. And getting a random text message of what I should be doing for this fight, or he's watching sparring tapes of what I was doing, we need to change this, we need to change that. I mean, this guy cares about my career just as much as I do, and that's why it works, you know?
Yeah, it's true. I want him
so
to
his
be
system
the best
changes. I mean, it's a great thought out system, but I've never had the same training camp. Mm. You know, I don't ever have the same calm. We have like, your system base is the same, but it always veers off. Like, I don't even know what the TJ combo is anymore. I think it's changed.
We
like
always
eight,
gotta change things
changed
up.
Like eight times, you know. So it's always like an add-on or a change. So,
Well, I remember the first time you fought Hannon Burrell when you won the title, and Dwayne and I had lunch together, And there was a bunch of people at the table, but Dwayne didn't even know they were alive.
Nope.
He wasn't even paying attention. He was just telling me exactly how it was going to go down. And he was just talking about all the things they've been, and his hands are moving, and his shoulders are twitching.
You're trying to be
calm
now.
His eyes are moving around back and forth, and he was going 100 miles an hour with his voice. Just blah, 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 blah. I was like, wow, dude, you're geared up. And he goes, he's going to fuck him up. He's going to fuck him up.
For sure.
I mean, you see the emotion that he shows inside the octagon after the fights, you know? So that's how much he cares going into it. That's how nervous he is, you know? And like I said, if you have a coach that cares that much about you and your career, then you don't let it go.
Yeah, you know? when you were in Sacramento and then you moved to Colorado, you have basically kind of had to start from scratch. A lot of people obviously know who you are. You're a well sought out trainer, but you were opening up your own place from scratch. Sir. And now that place is fucking mobbed, and you're expanding.
Yeah, yes, sir. Yeah, we're expanding and just continuing to grow and have a good positive outlet for people to explore their soul. Right. That's why I'm here, is to teach martial arts. So it's I'm glad everyone else is realizing that as well, and I can cross paths with the ninjas like TJ Dillashaw and help them become better martial artists. And it's just the good. I'm 100% living vicariously through TJ and all my athletes and everybody under the BMT umbrella. And it's a good way to give back and basically relive another career for the most part, right? So and that's what we should be doing anyways, paying the positive lessons forward and onto the next generation. And that's the definition of sensei, actually, meaning history teacher, you know, from those who've come before you. So, and to have somebody like TJ as dedicated as he is, it's a true blessing. And that's why I'm all in. He's all in, I'm all in. Let's go.
Yeah, well, it's just rare that you find all in coach and all in fighter. Yep. And they get together, and you guys have such unique working.
I'm more than all in. Same with you. Like, yes, I'm like addicted, you know, like I can't, like, if I'm not completely like full blown into it, I mentally I'm fucked when I get home, you know?
Now, coming off of the second victory over Cody and then being able to stop him even quicker this time, and just all the crazy shit talking that led up to that fight and the results of the first fight, I mean, that's got to be very satisfying to you that everything is going according to plan.
Absolutely, man. It is. I mean, especially with the whole build-up. You know, it was like 2 years of just bullshit having to deal with that in my life. And that's not the kind of person I am, you know. I'd rather be in the mountains, you not be able to get a hold of me hunting or just camping. And like, if I could disappear, I'd take the advantage to do it, you know. So that crazy attention and just like the shit talking, the TV show, them accusing me of everything, like, that took a lot, you know. And so for all that to be like taken off my shoulders feels great.
For you, though, that's got to be a real feeling of like retribution too. Like, no matter what they said, like you had the right idea. They might not have been happy that you decided to do it for yourself, and the right move for yourself was to go to Colorado and be with Dwayne. But obviously you were right.
Yeah. Oh, 100% I was right. I mean, that's why I made the decision. I'm definitely, you know, you got to be selfish in this sport. You got to do what's best for yourself.
In some ways, without fucking people over, you have to be selfish.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, we have to know what's best for you. And then, so the ultimate decision for me was when I got an ultimatum. You know, like, Uriah knew how much I liked training with Dwayne. He knew how great it was for my mentality, and we just vibed right away, you know, and they didn't. And so when he gave me the ultimatum, like, look, man, you're either doing your camp with Dwayne or you're doing it with us. I was like, well, then you don't have my best interest in heart. I'm out of here. You know, like, I sold my house, bought, when I moved out to Colorado, like, I dropped everything and went. Dude, that was tough. You know, that was a tough situation to go through. And I made the right choice.
You know, well, your decision, the way you approached it, was very similar to what you were doing too, because when I talked to you, you're like, I'm gonna open up my own gym in Colorado. And I remember thinking, whenever someone thinks they're gonna start from scratch with a new gym by themselves, I'm like, ugh. I mean, I wish you well, but damn, that's a lot of work. You know, as well as anybody.
Yes, sir. I've known since I was a kid I was gonna be a world champion and have my own academy in Colorado. Check.
Wow.
So starting a gym is tough, man. We're doing it now. Yeah. We've been going through it for the last year and a half down here in Southern California. So.
Yeah, and the new place is called?
The Training Lab.
The Training Lab.
But it's spelled funny. It's
got R-E-I-N, rain.
Yeah, because Mark Munoz had rain down in Lake Forest. And Sam Calavita, the guy that I moved down for strength conditioning, just his crazy mind. He's beyond smart. Like, everything he talks about, like, I have to be at his house for hours, pretty much doing a podcast with him to figure out what he's talking about, and usually always goes over your head. You know, I've gone, like I said, I'm always full blown. I'm in 100%. And so as soon as he started showing me the science behind what my body needs to do for my diet, my recovery, the days I'm working out, the way I'm doing my strength conditioning, and what if I'm going to go bigger or how far I am from camp, like, everything has a rhyme and reason. Like, every calorie I eat, every macronutrients I eat, He's got it down, written down. He's like this guy. Yeah. He stays up late and works. And he doesn't do it for the money or the pride. Like, he doesn't want anything. Like, we do it out of his garage. You know, it's like an old Rocky-style training with Drago Science.
I saw that on the UFC countdown videos.
Yeah, man. We're out in the park. You know, we're doing crazy. Yeah. Like, yesterday I was out in the park with him doing a bunch of crazy stuff and a lot of reaction time stuff. And just the way he trains is very, very scientific. And I've seen the gains insanely. You know,
really?
For as old as I am, I'm the strongest and fastest I've ever been.
How old are you now?
32. But I've been training since I was 8, you know,
right.
I never got into diet, never got into any of this until I started picking Sam's brain. And I think the real – I mean, everything's – it's not bro science either. We're not like, oh, I think I feel better.
Right.
I'm testing myself. You know, I've boosted my hormones. I wasn't able to get my wife pregnant for 3 years, and it happened in 3 months after meeting Sam. Like, I went full blown. I went so full blown that I created my own, like, spice company around his diet. You know, like, I don't.
What has he got you doing differently? How were you eating before? And what were you doing before for strength and conditioning before you met him?
So it was. I didn't care about what I ate. I don't cut much weight. You know, 35 right. isn't a very big cut for me.
What do you walk around at?
Like, right now, I probably woke up 150 this morning. That's a little bit lighter than normal. But I haven't been doing my. I bulk up to go 35s. I put on another, like, good 5 pounds of muscle before I start to even worry about my weight at 35s. But. I was just eating whatever, you know. And I used to make fun of Danny for being gluten-free. Like, ah, give me more gluten. I don't care. I'll eat whatever I want. I'm the best, you know. I'll just train harder than everyone. But not only my age, but just learning the science behind it. Now I'm not eating grains, you know, no sugars unless it's simple, like from fruits and stuff like that. Yeah, man, I mean, it's a special diet. I'd say, like, you like almost go like paleo, keto, kind of, but obviously our bodies can't do that because I need the simple carbs and need carbs to run off and stuff. But yeah, man, I don't want to give away all his secrets, but yeah, man, he's changed up a lot with me.
You don't want to give away all his secrets, but when it comes to nutrition, like, what is different? Like, what kind of protein does he have you eating? What portions of protein? How much of it is fat? Well, are you getting your fat from avocado, coconut oil? What are you getting it from?
Oh, yeah, a lot of nuts, a lot of coconut oils. They even pre-make my meals, so I don't even think about what meals I'm eating. So
Jesus Christ.
He does all three of my meals and two of my snacks every day.
And you live in that area when you're in training camp?
Yes, yeah. So I just bought a house in Yorba Linda.
It's a nice area.
Dude, I love it. It's amazing. It's a real good family area, good school district, so... that's how you know your life has changed, when you look at houses for school districts.
Dude,
trust me.
Being a father's greatest. But I'm lucky.
Change of the whole shifting of your world.
It's everything. Yeah, I mean, it's everything. That's all you think about, you know?
It takes a while to realize you're a different person. Like, I'm a different person than I used to be.
I remember you made a comment before saying that there was an old banana or a fresh banana or something,
there was
right?
was a bit from my act.
Oh, is that what it was?
That's when I realized something. There was two bananas, and one of them was, like, yellow and perfect, and the other one was brown and fucked up. But my daughter loves bananas, so I took that brown fucked up banana and I ate it because I realized that I was putting her above me. And that was – I'd never thought about that before. And then I said, because I love my wife. She's an awesome person. But if it's just me and her – that bitch is getting a shitty banana.
That's why I drive a freaking Subaru car, because it's got 5-star crash rating, good in the snow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think of the kids first.
Dude,
for sure.
Subaru, they own Denver.
Colorado, they own it. Tons of Subarus.
They own Colorado.
But I did just get a Tesla.
Oh.
So I'm supporting the podcast. Well, kind of like I just dropped $50,000. You know, you go on the website, you punch in the information, you put in $1,000 deposit, and then you got to wait for a while for it to be built.
Right.
So it's not like I dropped $50,000. And then I'm going to lease it through the business anyway, but I've been wanting to get one for a while.
It's funny, man, how Subarus, like, they've proven themselves in Colorado just for reliability.
They're awesome. Yep. There are a ton of old ones still floating around.
Everywhere. Literally, if you go through Boulder, it's like 50% Subarus.
I would say that, yeah.
They just, they've just said, let's just cut the shit.
Yeah.
This one is the best in snow.
Yeah.
Let's stop fucking around. They never break.
Yeah.
Fucking Japanese cars, man, they never. I've had 3 Lexuses. Never had a single problem with any of them.
Yeah, it's a good built car.
Over like 15, 20 years, I've had Lexuses. They never fuck up.
Perfect.
They just start every time. No fuck ups.
300,000 miles on it, it's still going to run.
Yeah, other cars you get in, the windows roll halfway down. What the fuck's going on? Ding, ding, ding. Lights go off in the dashboard. What is this?
Yeah.
It shuts off. Ah, fuck.
Put black tape over it. You won't see it no more.
Yeah.
Well, you know. I don't know. It's got to be difficult to build cars. Speaking of cars, does everybody know you have that fucking thing outside? Are you allowed to talk about?
Oh, yeah, I'm allowed to talk about it, yeah.
You got one of my favorite cars ever.
Dude, I love it.
The new NSX.
It's amazing car.
That thing's a spaceship.
It really is, man.
Yeah, spaceship.
Dude, it's a real spaceship.
It's a real fun car.
Doesn't it? What are we talking about? It has four engines. Three of them are electric. I mean, it is a crazy,
it's got that twin-turbo V6. I mean, it's only got... high 500s in horsepower.
There
but,
it is. Look at that fucking yeah. thing.
But oh, it
only got high 500s.
But the torque on it is insane because it's a two electric motors. So right. off the start, it's so fast. 0 to 60 in 2.9 seconds.
Jesus!
It's wow. fast, dude.
So good looking, too.
Yeah.
I love the way they look. They look like a car that's supposed to be built in 2018.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like that shit's from the future.
It took them a long time to create that car. I mean, they stopped making the second generation NSX, like what?
2005. Yeah. I had one.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
That's why you're a huge fan of them, too, yeah.
Yeah. I had one in the early 90s, and then I had one in 2003.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, did you like the early 90s or 2000?
No, I like the headlights better in the newer one.
Okay.
But they're all awesome.
Yeah.
They're just, it's not a fast car. Like, if you buy it, I think it had 270 horsepower.
Okay.
But it's all aluminum. Mm. It's mid-engine. It sounds amazing when it gets high, like, hot in the high revs. But it doesn't sound like... It's not like a like an old Mustang. It's like, fuck you. Like, yeah. like metal as it's driving in the street. It's like a sophisticated sound.
Yeah.
But a cool sound. The VTEC engine...
That was my one problem with the new NSX was that how quiet it was because it's a hybrid. So I'm like I said, I was the one of three cars in the United States right now that have a custom exhaust for it to make it sound a lot better. This guy out in Chicago, a B-Rogue, I think it is, has designed an exhaust for it.
You know, that car is also, even though it's an Acura, that car is made and designed in the United States.
Yeah, factory's in Ohio, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, it's a total American car.
Yeah,
but it's
awesome.
Under the Acura. I mean, it's like, what is American anymore? I mean, I don't even understand.
Yeah, every time
anymore.
I order stuff, it's always from China or Pakistan or something. So, mm-hmm.
But yeah. It's also like the parts. Like, are all the parts made here?
No.
Everything,
no way.
You know, like
assembled.
That's an issue with Harley Davidson, right? Trump wants us to ban Harley Davidsons now.
I didn't
boycott.
Know that.
Boycott Harley Davidsons.
Really?
Yeah, because Harley Davidson is going to shift their factories to somewhere to make some part of it or maybe
shouldn't
all of it.
Shouldn't he be talking with Elon Musk and saving the world?
I don't know. I don't think anybody could do Trump's job. I don't think anybody could be president. I think it's stupid.
There's no way.
Stupid to ask one person to have that much responsibility.
Yes.
Yeah.
That person, there needs to be like 10, 15 people to handle that
at
job
least.
For sure.
Maybe 30.
There's no way I'd ever want the pressure of that
Fuck
job.
That job. No way. Fuck that job.
I wonder how much he's actually doing, though.
I don't wonder how much pussy he's getting. I really want to know. Because I don't think he's just stopped getting pussy. He's like, I'm Trump.
Yeah, for sure. He's you know? He's still on the roll.
There's got to be, I mean, whether him and Melania still hook up. She seems upset with him. It's interesting as a drama. As you watch it all go down, like, is the investigation closing in on him? Are they going to put him in jail? Or is he going to be like, fuck you, I'm getting my spaceship. I'm flying away. I don't know.
For sure he has a spaceship.
Well, if he doesn't, he's trying to find out if he can get one.
A
gold one that says Trump
on
the
side. That's
why
he's
got to
work with Elon Musk again.
Yeah.
See, he'll get a spaceship
well, Elon
real quick.
Bailed on him when they got out of the Paris Accord. Yeah. The climate accord.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know enough about this.
I don't know how your brain holds on to even that much information.
I don't know
either,
man.
You remember everything.
I remember too much. It's a problem. I don't remember shit. But, like, my wife will tell me from Tuesday. I'm like, what? You told me that? She's like, we're standing right here. She'll like go over all the details because she remembers all of it. I'm like, okay, I guess you're right. Okay.
I'll for sure.
But I'll tell you, in 1852.
Exactly. Exactly.
Pull up some facts and stats.
Some stupid stats.
That's how I am. Like when it comes to martial arts, I feel like I understand, I have a good grasp on what's happening. But the outside of martial arts, I don't know that much.
Yeah, but that's probably good, man. You know, I think there's something real power in that, having a singular focus. I think in order to be great at something, you have to be that way.
I wouldn't say singular, but I would say very dominantly focused.
Yeah,
you know?
I think you're right.
Because I would, if I was only thinking about MMA, I would not be here.
That's a good point, right? Like you need some other things that interest you to relieve the pressure.
Have to.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's too much and you snap.
What is the best one for you?
Escape-wise?
Yeah.
Jumping on my Malibu boat in my backyard in Colorado and wake surfing and just getting out.
Or
hunting. Both those. I like getting out. I just went and hiked around in the mountains of Colorado I only got to do 2.5 days because I'm too busy. But by myself, no one else. First time I ever hunting the area. I scouted it like 3 days before camp, but just went out by myself. Didn't have a cell phone reception, nothing. Just to your own thoughts for 2.5 days.
So this type of year, this time of year, archery mule deer, was that what it was?
Yeah, so I tried getting a elk tag in Colorado, but I didn't draw. I did draw a mule deer tag for the same area. But it's heavily dominated elk, so it's hard to get a mule deer there.
Yeah, it's hard to get those two to coincide with each other, but that's hard hunting. That's mountain hunting. That's the real deal.
Yeah, man. I mean, you're going from 8,000 to 10, 11, 12,000 feet, you know, hike two or three of those mountains and you're toast when you get back.
Hey man, when you do that, bring that, Shroom Tech Sport. That on a Shroom Tech Sport, any cordyceps mushroom supplement, anything along those lines, that's literally how it came about. They realized these high-altitude cattle herders were realizing that their cows were more active when they were eating these certain mushrooms. And that's the cordyceps mushroom. We actually grow. We don't grow, but you know, we buy it from people who grow it. Yeah. They grow it off caterpillars.
Oh, no way. They grow off the caterpillar?
Yeah, it's fucking weird shit, man.
All cordyceps mushrooms are grown that way?
I don't know about all, but a lot of them.
That's crazy.
Yeah, they grow them on caterpillars. So they're definitely not vegan. Unless... Yeah, I mean,
I take Shroom Tech and Alpha
Brain
before every session. So
is that a plant-based, like?
It's fungal-based.
Okay. But mushroom does.
Yeah. Mushrooms, they take in air, and they breathe out carbon dioxide like we do. Okay. They're closer to animals than they are to plants. Mm. This is a whole different cat. You ever listen to Paul Stamets?
No. Mm-mm.
Oh, my God. I did a podcast with him. Strap yourself in. Take three hits, hold on tight, buckle down, and listen to that guy's podcast. He's a real mycologist, an actual scientist who studies mushrooms, and he's amazing. So that's how cordyceps mushrooms are grown.
Okay.
Where's the caterpillar underneath that?
No, you can just buy. That's a culture.
That's a culture of them.
Yeah, I thought it would have a caterpillar in there. But.
Oh, okay. So this is for your home. Yeah. You could. That's probably even better, right? You get it fresh.
I don't know how you make it.
I don't know how to make it either. Yeah. A lot of dudes grow shrooms, though. It's pretty easy, apparently.
Yeah.
But just it's a phenomenal supplement, and if you're doing anything high altitude, it will absolutely increase your endurance. That is one of the only supplements that I'll tell people, look, if you're skeptical about any of this shit, please, I want you to, before you work out, an hour before, you take 4 Shroom Tech Sports and get ready because you're going to have an extra gear. Mm-hmm. You got one extra gear in training. It's like one extra push.
Them. Yeah, like I was saying earlier, I take them before every session with TJ. Mm-hmm. Shroom Tech and Alpha Brain.
It's the B12, it's cordyceps mushrooms, B12, and adaptogens. And those are all really important things for energy. So does Calavita have you doing all kinds of supplementation, and what has he got you taking?
So everyone's got a different supplement plan because he does a hair analysis from us and decides.
Jesus
like,
Christ, he's a scientist.
Everything's got numbers, man. Everything.
Hair analysis.
Yeah. So my supplement base would be different than Dwayne's. I mean, a lot of us have the same aminos. We have the same creatine, obviously depending on where you're going for a fight. You know, that kind of stuff. But when it comes down to what's in your body mineral-wise, like I might have more magnesium or more this or more that. And he gets our body back to homeostasis. So we'll take out what we have too much of. I might need more vitamin B.
Was there any examples of things you have too much of?
I have too much arsenic in my body.
Oh, what were you eating?
I think it's rice. I think the rice is given a lot of – because rice is heavily – because it's grown in water. And so the arsenic's coming out of the water.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think it's right. It could be for my tattoos as well. I mean, ink. Yeah, the ink has arsenic in it.
I'm fucked.
Yeah, man. The only person that have more arsenic in my body than me in our camp was Cub Swanson.
Wow. Yeah. And he's all covered in
his
tattoos.
His whole back and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. That is crazy. Mm-hmm. Now, did they find a way to eliminate it? Can you eliminate it?
Yeah, so I'm taking I'm taking a lot of different stuff for it, but I'm taking chlorella. I juice every day. I juice cilantro. Cilantro's are good for heavy metals, getting a detox. I'm taking methionine, which is like amino to pull it out of your body. And then he's got some drops on me. I'm on too. I don't even know what they are.
Now, have you got a second test?
Yeah, it's come down by over 50%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So if it's still in your system and it's not – you're not eating rice anymore. Mm-mm. So it's got to be from your tattoos.
Yeah, it could be. I mean,
or is it just slowly leaving?
You can't. So you can do a collation where they do it by IV, but that stuff's like it's hard on you how fast it comes out. So it comes out in like pimples. It'll come out like when I'm on. it started coming out of my arm. Like, it would mainly, I'd get pimples throughout my arm, and that's kind of your body pushing it. You also push it through your urine and things like that, but it'll come out of your skin.
You got arsenic zit, son.
Yeah.
How weird.
Yeah.
I tested for arsenic once, but I was eating sardines. I was eating a lot of sardines. Mm. And apparently they live around the bottom of the ocean, and they get a lot of the heavy metal poisonings from that way. That's crazy, but it makes sense with rice. That totally makes sense.
Yeah, but everyone's got different supplements. Like, it just depends on what's in your body, like how, like what you need to get back to perfect homeostasis.
Right.
And then he adds, like, you know, the certain amino body or muscle building and ubiquinol and the krill oils and things like that for building new red blood cells and things like that.
But what is his scientific background?
So I don't know all of that. I know he worked for NASA. He was like working with the nuclear anti-defense system, and then he missed a Christmas or something and decided to move home and be a school teacher, and he became a calculus teacher.
Whoa.
And he does like at a private high school, and people travel all over the world to do his class, to take his class. He won some award to be in the best calculus teacher in the world. Like, all of his kids on his placement test scored, I don't know if it's perfect or very high, and it was – so yeah, he's – he's just like math. Math will tell you everything. Behind the numbers. It's not, like I said, it's not bro science. It's to the exact. You know exactly if you're getting better.
Well, he must apply that science to his understanding of energy and of intensity, because, like, the way you guys train, it's very intense, very explosive. It reminds me a lot of what I'm seeing, at least, of like Marv Marinovich's type training, like a lot of plyometrics. A lot of things along those lines. Would that be fair to say?
Absolutely. But then we're also doing deadlifts and cleans, and we're doing a lot of stuff, man.
And he mixes it up a lot?
Yeah, depending where you're at in your camp, how your body – also the recovery. So the recovery is huge. He listens to our body while we're sleeping. So he gets a report every morning of
how – he's next to you in the bed.
Pretty much. He'll know, like, if you had a couple glasses of wine last night, you know, like, why are you not recovering? He just, like, knows – or if he knows you're too stressed out, he knows – like, he'll tell me when I'm going to get sick.
Yeah.
Like, he's caught on to me getting sick before I got sick.
Really?
He's like, oh, your body's about to crash. Like, you need to, like, take the next 2 days off. Like, whoa. You need to really rest.
He helped keep TJ in that last fight. Yeah. He helped repair some injuries, right? We have to talk about him, but without Sam, that fight may have been different.
Probably my last two fights.
Yeah, you're right.
I've been dealing with some serious stuff the last couple of fights, but I've been able to keep my body very, very strong. You know.
You also spent some time with Dr. Neil Reardon down in Panama, and was that for the same type of injuries?
Same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So a combination of the science of stem cell and Dr. Neil Reardon, as well as Mora here. I got stem cells in the States. I got it in Panama. Like, I've had to do a lot to hold myself together, kind of thing. You know, and I don't feel great. Because of the way I'm training and
I don't think people understand the kind of strain on your body a fight camp puts. It's fucking crazy. I mean, if I worked out the way you guys did once, I'm wrecked for a week.
But
you guys
are
doing 2-a-days every day, constantly going at it, and then there's ice baths. What does he have you doing? Sauna, ice bath? What does he have you got?
For our recovery, I mean, mainly it's just most of the time taking the time off. But we have it's always changing. It's always evolving, too. He's got, like, this iMile Pro we do for, like, some sort of stim on our muscles. I do light therapy.
Stim, like electrical stim?
Mm-hmm. I do light therapy. There's this new place he's starting to work with down in Mission Viejo called, like, O2 Recovery Center, where we'll do cryo, we'll do hyperbaric chamber, we'll do was it CVAC or something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A bunch of different stuff we're going to add to
CVAC
it.
CVAC is a machine we were talking about really recently where it jacks you up in altitude and then brings you down. Mm-hmm. It, like, changes the pressure inside that little tube. And mm-hmm. That's supposed to be pretty amazing. Did you have good results with that?
I actually haven't done it yet. So he's telling me now that, like, we're going to add this now. Like, it's always like every time I come back to camp, it's like we're adding the next step. He doesn't do it all at once.
As it should, right? Yeah. Life's always changing and evolving. It's never, the times.
It'd be like you teaching me the BMT black belt system right away,
right,
without
yes,
knowing any of it, yeah, you know. So he, like, gets my body, like, slowly adapted to certain things, and then he adds to it.
What about massage?
A lot, yeah.
Yeah, what kind of massage?
He doesn't have me do it. I just do it because I love it, you know. But I always do deep tissue for the most part, mm-hmm. and then a lot of the, like, mat, like the stretching, kind of like
Thai massage type stuff.
Yeah, a lot of Thai massage, and then they'll also, exactly.
Yeah,
I forgot they stretch.
That's
out
amazing.
Really well.
Yeah. They stand on your back and pull your arms up. And you're like,
I have a student, Brett Tomasini. He is by far the best massage therapist I've ever come across.
He's
good. Really? He's
badass. There's some ones out there.
Man, he's got a black belt in massage therapy, that's for sure.
Like a good massage shouldn't feel that great to the average person. Like it's going
to
hurt.
It's supposed to hurt.
But it's how you're going to feel afterwards. And I actually now have learned to enjoy the pain kind of thing. I've been working this whole last camp too. A guy that really helped me get to my camp was I'm an idiot right now.
That's good.
Drawing a blank. But Javier, he did a lot of body work on me that hold me in place as well too.
Body work as opposed to like what is body work as opposed to regular massage?
So he's more of like the nervous system of all your pathways and really find out what's weak. Like he'll tell me like something that's like weak before I even let him know before the massage.
How can you tell that?
I don't know how I can tell that. I'm not really sure. I'd have to have him tell you.
So there's something weird about people that touch people's bodies all the time, and you go, "This is all horseshit." And then they put their arm on your shoulder. What's going on with your shoulder? You're like, what? What do you mean? And like it's very very tense up here. You have an injury you're nursing? Like what?
Yeah, how'd you know?
Yeah, how the fuck do you know?
There's that sixth sense for sure. Something's going on.
They just get used to like the difference between your left side and your right side. You're like, oh, something's going on here. It's like everything else, right? Like your understanding of what an athlete is capable of is so different than a person who doesn't train. And I think it's gotta be we can't imagine someone being able to touch your pec and go, oh, you've got a tear. You got a muscle tear. You're like, what?
Mm-hmm. But there's also those massage therapists that will do something like, how's that feel? You feel better? It's like, oh, yeah, I guess I feel better.
Yeah.
You know? But this guy will find my weaknesses without me even telling him. He'll know, like, things that I need to get worked on. He knows my hips are aligned. Like, kind of like almost like a chiropractor as well, but he doesn't do chiropractic work.
Good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You don't like chiropractors, huh?
I just don't think it's real.
I love them. I love to get lined back up.
Good.
I've had my neck just tweaked and not be able to do anything and then get lined back up and be ready to go.
Yeah.
It's definitely helped
massage,
me.
I think, and massage. Works better than anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just too much about what chiropractic medicine was, how it started. It started by a guy who was a magnetic healer who learned about it in a seance, and then his son murdered him and took over the business.
Turned out to be something good.
But they're
people are crazy, huh?
The good thing about, I mean, it's interesting what's good and what's not. You know, what's provable is it's very interesting.
Yes, sir.
People always say that it's a part of the National Institute of Healthcare. Is that what it is? A part of their recommended program, but it's not anymore. They removed it. There's no real evidence that shows it works. The thing about it is, though, it's like I just adjusted myself. Yeah. Like I adjusted my knuckles. Yeah. That's literally what they're doing to your back.
I've had, over 100 fights or whatever and had my neck jacked up and wrestling and shots. And I've had pretty significant injury where I couldn't like change lanes and turn and drive and then go get adjusted and be back to square one.
I think I've done the same thing with massage. I think there's something to people touching you and working on stuff and loosening you up in a way that you can't do. And I'm not saying that there's not good chiropractors out there that really understand all the other things like cold laser therapy and different kinds of manipulation in terms of like, you know, muscle stretching and what is that type of Rolfing? Rolfing is legit.
It's What's
a
that?
Brutal massage. Hurts, Just a brutal, brutal massage. But it's one of those things where it breaks everything down, and then after it's over, everything's very loose.
Okay.
And there's a lot of chiropractors that are really good physical therapists too. But just the underlying principles of what the chiropractic medical practice is. It started off with nonsense. The guy thought he could fix everything by adjusting you. Oh, something wrong with your eyesight? Let me fix it.
Yeah, there's going to be limits
for
sure.
Let me fix it. I'm going to crack your neck and you're not going to have bad breath anymore.
Like,
that's like, stupid.
But if he tells you to believe it, people are like, oh, nice, I do.
Right. The power of belief is huge. Yeah.
That's part of the problem. Yes, sir. It's one of the things they prey on. One of the things that they use is, and not necessarily, there's levels to this whole thing. It's not just regular chiropractors.
There are levels.
There's different kinds of air quote healers.
Yes, sir.
That have like different systems that they think they can push down the middle of your back and cure your pancreas.
Yes, sir.
So much horseshit.
Yeah.
But it's not real. You know, but there are a bunch of things you can do that are real, and massage is one of them. Massage. It's absolutely a fact that it's helped loosen people up and relax people and just something about being manipulated like that. Like if somebody really digging their elbow into your tissue and loosening everything up. We got this fucking Tim Tam. You ever use one of these?
Yeah. I have a Tim Tam and dude. I have the Theragun as well, too.
Frost. This is the motherfucker.
Yeah. I think I have yours.
Yeah. Yo, is that one? Okay, cool. Yeah.
He probably doesn't have it. Right. I think I have his.
That thing is the shit. Yeah. That thing is amazing.
Frost, thank you.
Oh, yeah. Frost, a hobby in the house.
He sent me one of
those. Have like anything that's like knotted up and really bothering you, you hammer it with that fucking thing. Yeah. And then afterwards, it's like, ooh.
One of my students made one of those out of a little drill or a gun.
Sawzall,
I think. Yeah. Put a tennis ball or something on it.
Yeah, that's essentially what this is. Yeah. I mean, it's just the same kind of motor that's going
up
and
down. He's like, don't buy that. Yeah. That guy make this thing for $30. I'm like, I'm good.
Just get a fucking leg off.
Yeah.
You know? So when you guys are doing camp, do you move down to California for the – what do you do, 6 or 8 weeks? How many weeks are you doing?
I do a lot. I do more than I probably should. But, I mean, I'd almost do camp before I get into camp kind of thing.
Really?
Like, I like to get
yourself in shape?
Yeah, I like to be in shape when camp starts, you know.
We're always developing new things.
This camp, Dwayne came out, like, started coming out 9 weeks before the fight, maybe 10, nine.
It was a little extra, more than 2 months.
And he would do 3 days. He'd come out, fly out.
Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Or no, I'm sorry. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So be out here 3 days, back home 4 days. Splitting time. But it worked out well. With that, I was able to find which I was already aware of. Slow down, motherfucker. Sorry, I get excited.
You're doing great. No problem.
I got my notepad right here.
I just
feel
like I'm in the corner. Folks, I'm going to tell you. Dwayne's like, I got to talk slower today. Yeah. I'm going to talk slower. People always complain I talk too fast. Yeah. I'm going to talk slower.
But you get a lot of information in that 1 minute of corner time.
See, you know what? That's what I talked about, because that's why I talk fast. Yeah. This is why I'm wired, why I talk fast. I got about 30 seconds to talk and relay information, which is also why I have the actual system and code all the drills and combinations so I can condense it, right? I don't want to say jab, cross, hook, cross, three.
Yeah, like, for instance, you can get in the corner for my IC Tomorrow fight, tell me what to do, and I walk out there, and 30 seconds later, I knock him out, whatever it is, you know? Like, because you're able to get the information off, and there's a system to it.
Yep, so, laying out, mapping. There's routines, and there's patterns of success, you know? There are high-percentage drills and combinations that have been proven to be successful. Well, how about we just keep practicing those? Obviously, it's up to the athlete to find the timing, distance, and accuracy to pull them off.
And
but
you have to believe.
There they are. Yeah, the power of the belief, right?
You have to believe in the system, too. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't be like... Like, if I didn't believe exactly what Dwayne was telling me, or that he can see it, that I know he can see it because he's good at it, like, or why are you really going to go out there and do what he says?
That's one thing I had with Boss, too. Whenever he gave me information, I did not doubt it at all, as I knew he's been there and done that. And it wasn't stuff that he felt he would do. It's stuff that he knew that I should do, right? And I feel I understand TJ, and I could give him the proper information for the proper time. But also, I know when to sit back and let him flow as well, right? And when to chime in and give him information. And he's really good about, you know, receiving information. As a case in point, the first fight with Cody, between the rounds, we had to drastically change things. And what we needed to change was just the timing of our attack. It's pretty simple. To me, fighting is now, I don't think I know it all. I mean, I know I don't know it all, but it's all I know, and I know a lot, that's for sure. But I was going back to earlier, traveling out here 3 days a week and back home 4 days. Again, I found a really good... Fuck, slow down, motherfucker.
You're doing
back
great.
To square one. I found a good rhythm of us, as far as pulling off information, as far as the pads, the class, sparring, and this was like we're layering it up, we're practicing it in class, now we're sparring with it, and then going back to what we need to work on. So I found a really good pyramid for TJ to retain, or for anyone to retain the information, kind of condensing it into 3 days. It was really fun. I look at it as an experiment. What's the most optimal way for someone to perform and fight safe and effectively? It's fun. I love this shit.
There's a lot of people that want to go to these big giant super camps, and I know, you know, with Alpha Male, you were in a big giant super camp. What you're doing now is very different, and this is something that obviously Stipe Miocic was doing. There's a lot of other fighters that were doing, that are doing, where a lot of it is based around them. Mighty Mouse, in particular, he's another one. I mean, there are unquestionably professional fighters around them, but it's not like they're in a building with six other world champions, and there's a bunch of, you know, savages that are coming up that, you know, and everybody's trying to kill each other. It's a different setup. Like, it's a lot of it is geared towards you.
It is, and it's just the natural way it kind of happened this time.
Is this better? What is better? Is it better to be in the doghouse with all the alpha male guys, where it's all just animals trying to kill each other?
Quality over quantity.
Yes, if it's not for money. You know what I mean? When these big gyms turn into something that wants to make money, then the real martial arts comes out of it. When you have coaches and people running it that are really going to not want to, like, I have a gym, the training lab. So I'm very fortunate that I have Steve Martin, yeah, a guy Steve's that's awesome. Been, he's put his heart and soul into this thing to keep this building open, because we're not making money. We don't have a, it's pretty much private. I teach a kids class and we do adult boot camp kind of things just to turn the lights on, just so the bills are paid, and then some sponsors here and there to pay the coaches. Like, we're losing money, and thank God that we have a guy like Steve Martin that's willing to see our dream, that we want to build a team that is not based around money, that it's whatever money we end up making from the gym is going every dollar to the coaches. You know, like, I don't want to make money. I don't want that awkward relationship between me and Juan Archuleta that I'm making money off him. You know what I mean? Because then you get that weird business relationship,
right,
rather than us just having a real relationship, like me wanting him to get better, him wanting me to get better, which I felt like maybe it used to kind of be that way at Alpha Male, but it's turned into a money thing to where it, I don't know, man. It wasn't like, there wasn't like, before we got Dwayne, we had no coach. It was just us coaching each other kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, that's not usually the best thing.
No, we were just beating each other. We were sparring 4 or 5 days a week.
Really?
Yeah, dude. I mean, I picked up stuff fast because of it, you know? Like, you had to learn how to fight.
Right.
And I'm aggressive and I like that stuff, but it's not smart, you know?
Right, in terms of, like, your overall wear health, and tear, your health.
Longevity in the sport.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, so I've turned into a real professional athlete sport instead of it just going to the gym and going ham. Like, I can go everywhere from my diet, everywhere from the way I work, the times I work out, my schedule, my recovery. Luckily, I'm having Dwayne that's able to travel out with me. I built an awesome facility right now with Mark Munoz circling back around, being a coach, Daryl Christian, Felipe De Monica, and all these guys. Like, it's not money driven, so it's doing great right now. We're awesome. We're doing awesome. So.
Yeah, he really does have a really good crew of people around him in all aspects.
And this is in, what, it's not your Belinda here there?
We're in Anaheim.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when the UFC's in Anaheim, you're a hop, skip, and a jump away.
Oh, yeah, we're right there. I mean, even fighting in L.A. was nice. I mean,
didn't
have to fly nowhere. It was cool to fight in your backyard.
Dan Lambert did all this before anybody. I mean, Dan Lambert, in terms of, like, throwing money at things and putting American Top Team together.
Oh, yeah, that's right, Top Team, yep.
I mean, that guy, he spent a fuckload of money. Put fighters on salary and then recently built a giant place with dormitories and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that guy, out of all the people, he's probably the pioneer of digging deep into his wallet and putting together a crazy gym setup like that.
Yeah,
but it's a different kind of crew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go down there, then there are a ton of world champions. There's a ton of professional athletes, and you know, you're not necessarily going to get the singular specified training that you're getting right now.
Yeah, for sure. And then, but we're also really so. Yeah, you could be really good, and we want you in our gym, but if you have the right personality as well, too. It's not only about your skill to come and train with our gym and be a pro athlete there. We also got a vibe with us. You
right.
know? If we don't have the vibe, then it's all egos are going to get involved, and the gym's going to split up. This guy's going to go here. This guy's going to go there. So,
how do you determine that? Do you get to know them first and then let them in the gym?
Yeah, we always let everyone in to see how they're going. If they don't work out, then we tell them, like, hey, man, this isn't the spot for you. You know, we don't have an open spot for you.
You can see it, though, with the drills and the Dutch drills and just the drilling in general, how caring somebody is, right? And
right.
There's four rules I ask my guys to follow, and they're all rules that revolve around accountability. It's show up on time, get better, get tired, take care of your partner. You do those four simple things and we're good. It's pretty simple.
Those are very good rules.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a sport that attracts people who are troubled.
Yeah, yeah. Agreed. Yeah, the Ronins, the Misfits.
Yeah, and then it's good for a lot of people that have been abused that want to get people back. You know, there's a lot of that. You remember a lot of when I was younger, the more aggressive, meaner people, when you would find out more about them, you'd find out there was child abuse. Dad used to beat him up. Stepdad beat him up. There was always something that they were trying to get back at people for.
Mm. I feel like the sport is changing enough now that it's a very common thing that kids want to do. And so now you have, you know, kids with a good upbringing wanting to do it.
Yeah. It's a challenging possible career now. And a fighter, you know, a young kid coming up sees someone like you and they go, okay, look at this guy. He's a 2-time world champion, super respectful, articulate, real friendly, doesn't have a chip on his shoulder. Likes, you know, shaking hands and taking pictures and being around people. Oh, you don't have to be an asshole. Like, you don't have to be some brooding asshole.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll get paid for it more these days, but...
Yeah. That's interesting, right?
Yeah. You get paid more for being a complete asshole, you know? And if you don't mind making a fool of yourself, then you'll get paid more, you know?
But, well, like Colby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, to the extreme to where, like, what? Come on.
Colby's hilarious. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's funny, man. When he actually went to the fucking White House and put the thing on Donald Trump's desk, gave him the belt, I was like, that is hilarious. He actually did it.
Yeah.
You know what would really, really be funny? If it turned out this whole time he was a Democrat. And this is all just a big act. Really, super pro gay rights. And
so if it would have been a Democrat in the office, he'd be a Democrat. And then, yeah, whoever's in the office, it's who he's.
Well,
be.
He's just doing it only specifically just for promotion.
Yeah,
him and Tyron Woodley's going to be crazy. That's going to be crazy.
So you know the videos on the internet, the one black dude that says, I'm Tyrone and fuck this or fuck that, whatever. You know the internet guy? Oh, they're hilarious. Can you pull up one of those videos of Tyrone? They're so funny.
How would you search it?
It would have been funny. Oh, I'm sorry.
You got to explain what the fuck you're talking about.
So,
what am I searching for?
Fuck Tyrone. He's hilarious, right? Watch, he'll pull one up. But it would have been funny.
Is it Tommy Toehold?
No. Do you know what I'm talking about, Jamie?
You do?
But, thank goodness, because I have been no idea.
Now. Okay, so watch this first. Watch one of these.
Give me some. Hold on, bring it from the beginning.
This is a long compilation of it. Oh. He just like kind of walks around and bullies people, sort of. And that's how you make a video. Kind of a joke.
Is that him though?
Yeah.
That's not the regular Tyrone, huh? This is another one.
It's a different Tyrone.
This is a different guy.
Yeah, this is a different one. The other ones, he's a different guy.
He'll go.
I mean, you're just typing Tyrone Black Dude in the internet. I mean, you're gonna get a lot of videos.
It's hilarious.
What does this have to do with Tyrone?
So it would have been funny because that's not the best clip. Because if he would have won the belt, he won the belt. Right, I'm Tyrone, and this is my motherfucking belt. So if you watch these videos and an actual good video of the Tyrone, and if Tyrone would do that in the cage, I've been thinking about this for a while. That should have been so fucking funny. But it's not funny. You don't know the damn videos. Yeah. Shit, Jamie, pull that up.
That's it.
I watched the Rogan show. That was the guy. I didn't mean to steal your line, Mr. Rogan. Sorry, sir.
That's hilarious. Yeah, he was almost after he won, like nothing happened.
Yeah. Well, he knew, right?
By UFC wants me to fight. But it's just weird, you know? Is this another one?
That's him.
Is it the same guy? Yeah.
This is one where he gets beat up for saying he's going to fuck somebody's wife or something like that.
Yeah. I'm Tyrone. Here it is. And fuck this Luke Kane looking motherfucker. I'm here to fuck your wife. Long dick stop. What you looking at him for? Fucking serious? Huh? What's up? What's up? You want to make a move? What's up? Well, do something. What's up? Do something. Well, I ain't scared.
I'm Tyrone. Yo. And fuck these kids. What happened to that one?
I didn't make the video.
This is like terrible editing.
He just does funny shit, right? But
it seems like he's just mean and stealing. I don't think that's funny, Dwayne.
No, they're funny. They're funny.
He's a mean stealer.
Oh, shit.
Okay, let's kill this.
Not as funny as I thought. Sorry, guys. Shit.
It seems like a bad sketch.
Some of them, anyway, maybe they're funny
Tyrone
on the spaceship.
Tyrone Woodley is not that guy.
No, he's not.
Although
if he funny.
Was, it would probably sell more tickets.
Yeah, for
that's
sure.
Probably. Yeah. See, that's where it tied in from like the Colby approach.
He's like super calm and respectful afterwards. Yeah. It's hard to believe he was just in a cage fight.
Yeah.
Dude, he shut all that Darren Till hype up quick.
I knew he was going
to
win.
I would like to talk to Tyrone or Duke and see if... Sorry to interrupt.
Okay.
And because how he caught him, because Darren Till, I made a video about this, how Darren Till typically likes to feint and pump and get the guy backing up, get them out of position, and then land the cross from open stance, from southpaw. And there is a slight delay between those 2 to 3 punches that he throws, and I'm wondering if Tyrone did his research and seen
Tyrone.
That. Tyrone. Does he say Tyrone? Not Tyrone?
It's not Tyrone.
Mr. Woodley.
Right? It's Tyron Woodley.
Tyron.
There's no
so
e.
that, now the joke wouldn't have been as funny. Tyron. So that's why you're saying Tyron. I mean, I'm wondering if you read that from watching the videos previously and seen that little gap in his combinations, was able to beat him to the punch, or if he just duck and chucked. I'm curious to see if that was something that they trained and sought out, or because that takes balls, right? He's coming in with his strongest punch, his cross, that he's knocked many people out with, and he just stepped into it and beat him to the punch. That takes balls.
Tyron, he always does that strategy of standing against the fence or close to the fence, and then when guys move in, he counters.
Yes.
I mean, he did that with Josh Koscheck. He's done that with a lot of guys. Mm-hmm. And Rory McDonald was the only guy to shut that down. He figured out a way to shut it down.
He stayed long.
Mm-hmm. Used a lot of front kicks, a lot of jabs, kept his left hand up high. To block the right hand, you know, the big right hand. But, man, Tyron's just faster than him, way faster
and,
than him.
Yeah, close the distance
closed that
so
distance,
quick.
Like lightning, landed that right hand, beat the shit out of him on the ground. It was just shocking to me that Darren didn't know what to do when he was on his back. Like, in terms of, like,
That's how I thought the fight was going to go. Like, him just be on top of him the whole fight. Mm-hmm. I thought Tyron's just going to out-wrestle him and be on top, you know?
Well, I thought maybe that was part of the strategy, too, especially when you saw them warming up, because Tyron was doing, like, a lot of, like, exchanges and then shoots for a double or closes the distance, level changes. Like, they did that when he was working with boxing coaches as well. He would hit the mitts and then move in, a level change.
Blend it together.
But I was just, Till didn't understand that Darce was coming or didn't know. But then you got to wonder, how battered was he? Mm. Took that big shot, took a lot of hard elbows on the ground. How much was he really there?
Yeah.
That's a beauty. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, because that Darce was a mile away. Mm. I mean, it was there, and then it was there, and then he cinched it up deep. It was never like, there was never any separation, never pulling the hands back.
I think Tyron's a lot stronger than him, too, able to hold him in that crunch, like, hold that position, you know?
He's a freak.
Yeah.
He's a beast.
Reason why he's the champion. But I think that's the way I choose to look at it anyway, is having a checklist, right? If you were to build up a mixed martial artist, how much information should they know standing, wrestling, and then on the ground?
Mm.
And they should just check, and know all these basics should be covered before you go fight.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of having a curriculum and, again, a checklist.
No, I absolutely agree with you. I think, you know, understanding, I mean, the days of just like being able to just fight someone and not know anything about them, that seems kind of foolish.
Yep.
Like, it seems like a massive advantage to study. Like, when Cowboy fought Darren Till, he decided to not watch any tape on him. He's like, you know, I hear he's a striker. Good. I love to strike. I'm like, oof. Okay, maybe might want to watch this striker.
I'll watch tape in the beginning with Dwayne. But then I kind of let him continue from there, you know, and I trust his judgment on everything.
Right.
And then when I'm out of fight camps, because sometimes when you watch tape in fight camp, like, it can mess with people's heads, you know, like maybe Cowboy's getting too nervous, and then when he's it gives him anxiety to watch the fight, you know.
Right,
so you need to have if that's the case, you know, have a coach that's willing to, that you trust to do that for you.
That's a good point.
You know, because, I mean, dude, this fucking sport's a mental mind fuck, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Of course.
And whatever works the best for you is that what you got to figure out.
Is it better for you to fight someone like Cody that you have all this animosity and beef towards and all this shit talking because you get super hyped up and motivated every day? Or is it better to fight someone who you have a lot of respect for, who is just a good challenge?
I think you got to learn to be the same person for every fight.
Mm.
You know, I think it's like control those emotions, you know, even though there was all that coming in, like, I'm nervous to fight, you know, like, forget all the bullshit, you know, and I had to learn that through my career. I had to learn to take emotion out of it. I mean, even in sparring still, you know, like, Dwayne's always told me, control my emotion, controlled aggression, you know, because you hit me, I want to hit you back. I'm very competitive, you know, so it's something you have to learn how to control, and I've had to do that throughout my career. And I think everyone has to learn to control, either to let go or to pull back, you know, like, really control that emotion to be the same person every fight. You know, mentally, not the same person every fight, but mentally, like, in your own head, the same person. But technically, need to be able to switch it up.
That the mental aspect of it is probably the thing that holds more people back than anything. Like, we all know of guys that are just monsters in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever it was, when they would go to compete, they just could never be their full self.
Yeah.
TJ does better in the cage than he does in the gym.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did better in the gym than in the cage. Yeah.
Yeah, what do you think it is that makes you do better?
I love it. I don't know. I mean, I've just taught myself to love this shit. Like, I don't know. When I get out there, it's just like, I want to be there. You know, like, I know everyone's nervous and like, they're like, it's the highest highs, but I used to be so nervous that I forget like what happened in the fight, you know, but throughout my career, I think after the Mike Easton fights, when I really started to like hone in, or during the Mike Easton fights, when I really started to hone in and have fun and just realize like, fuck this shit, man. Like, what's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to get knocked out. Go for it, you know, have
Where
some fun.
Where is Mike Easton?
I don't know.
The guy hasn't been around for a while.
Yeah, I'm not really sure.
There's a possible super fight with you and Henry Cejudo being talked about.
Hell yeah.
Would you fight him at 125?
25s.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want no excuses that I'm the bigger man. And
well, he probably is bigger than you, quite honestly.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
he struggles to get to 30, or from down to 25. I mean, 25. He's way over 35.
Especially with the coach I have now, Sam Calvita. It's like, I was told I was going to fight Demetrius Johnson the summer before I fought Cody the first time, because Cody had to pull out because of his back. Within 3 weeks of time, I got down to waking up to 140 pounds by changing the way I'm working out, changing my calories, changing my macronutrients, and my supplement, like, just going full bore. Like, I was able to start waking up in the morning 140 pounds within 3 weeks.
And so right now you're about 10 plus pounds heavier than that.
Mm-hmm.
And how much time would you need? Like if they said, hey, December 31st, New Year's Eve, super fight.
Yeah, my coach always wants like the like actual, like he told me like before, after my last fight. I mean, he's 16 weeks, but I mean, obviously we could do it a lot faster. I could have made 25s this last fight with how much water I had. I mean, the hydration that he's got me going on when I get close to a fight too is it's easiest. I don't do baths anymore. Like to make weight, I walked on the treadmill with plastics.
For how long?
The day of, I'd say 30 minutes. I sat in the sauna a little bit. And then
so you're only losing like 4 or 5 pounds most, right?
Yeah, in the morning. Yeah, probably like 3 or 4 or 5 pounds, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's a massive benefit to you in terms of your conditioning.
Oh, huge. Having fluid on your brain, your cardio, your muscular contraction and endurance. I mean, everything. I mean, when you deplete yourself like that, like you're talking about Darren Till maybe cutting too much weight, that could definitely be a possibility, you know?
For sure. I mean, he's huge. Mm-hmm. Till's a big guy to get down to 170.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that is trying to find the right balance where you're big for the weight class, but you're not diminishing yourself really drastically to get down to your weight class.
And the Henry Cejudo thing also entertains me so much because he's a gold medalist. You know, he wants to claim himself as the greatest combat athlete ever. I'm a UFC champion. I'm a gold medalist. Like, I'll go out there and beat you in wrestling. MMA wrestling is completely different. I'm the better athlete. I could beat him anywhere. I know I can watching him fight. That's what I'm very excited about. I think it's the greatest thing for my name right now. It excites me a lot. It excites me a lot too to be able to show the science behind not only myself but my coach and Dwayne in the system. Like everything, like I'm all in, dude. Whatever we're doing, I'm 100% in. I don't take any shortcuts, and I want to show that. I want to show that I can make 25s and be my best ever as well.
Now, Demetrius is injured.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. He's out for a little while.
Yeah.
So this is one of the reasons why the talk of this super fight is coming up.
Yeah.
Like it is, Demetrius is going to need a few months, so he can't have an immediate rematch.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Perfect.
Have they talked to you about it? Proposed?
You know, there's nothing serious, but there's been like hints, and like we did our media tour together and they put us on camera together and had us talk shit to each other.
Nice.
I mean, they didn't say that, you know what I mean? Because everything's real. Everything we do is real. But it's like, oh, shit, this is what you guys want.
Right.
You know, and like, you really think you can beat me? Then fuck you, man. Let's do this shit. You know, like, that's where I get my motivation from fighting is not the anger, not it's the competition.
And does he want to go to 35? Is that?
He told me face-to-face he's willing to do it at 25s.
25.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's what he first said after the fight. Is that he wanted the super fight, right?
Right.
That's what his idea is. So he said come up to 35. So I told him, I was like, look, if we're doing this, I'm coming to 25. He says, I have no problem with that.
He's got more street credit to drop a division street or to change a division. It's TJ, right? So.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it gives you more street credit for sure. Well, it certainly
and no excuses of the bigger
title.
Man. I don't want him to come to 35 and me whip his ass and be like, oh, well, he's because he's a 35-pounder.
He's a 35-pounder, too.
Yeah, I'll whip your ass.
He's a huge 125-er. Mm. He really is. Mm-hmm. I mean, you take out the weight cutting, there's not much difference between you two guys.
Yeah.
And when you
other than how much better I am.
Oh, shit.
But that's true.
Ooh, Henry, hang on. But when you saw him and Demetrius together, I mean, he's a much bigger person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's thick.
Yeah. He. How much weight does he lose?
Who's that?
Cejudo?
Yeah, Cejudo.
I don't know.
No, good question.
He's got to be in the 50s.
When he shows up to fight week, he looks like he's cutting weight already, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When I show up to fight week, I haven't even really started yet.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for your pace and your endurance, that's got to be a big benefit to know that your body's 100% healthy going in there in terms of, like, not being dehydrated. And there's so many guys, you see them on the day of the weigh-in, you go, I don't know how the fuck you're going to fight in 24 hours.
And I think head trauma is a lot more prevalent when you're dehydrated. Like, going through camp, like, I've known some guys that have cut a lot of weight, and it's already have hindered their careers, you know, because you're having those all-out spars. I mean, you're going... You have to go as hard as you can in sparring when you're ready for a fight. Like, you're going for your timing. You're fighting, right? I mean, you don't do it all the time. There's times to do
it. So when you're sparring like a fight?
For the most part. I mean, I'm not.
Larger gloves or?
Yeah. No. Well, we've been doing smaller gloves now sparring too. But those puffies that I have, they are, I feel like, as padded as my 16s.
It depends
where they put the padding.
The padding on the knuckles is thicker, if not thicker than 16.
Which company's gloves do you use for that?
Sanibel?
Oh, yeah.
Sanibel, yeah.
So the one you have. Where's that from?
Well, their office is in New York, but the guy, the owners, are living out here in California.
Is that a new company?
It's been around. It's fresh, somewhat new. It's not brand new. I think they've been around since 14, 2014. But yeah, I make great stuff. I mean, they have their puffy sparring gloves are awesome to be able to get to get real rounds in. Because when I grapple, I can't right. do full MMA rounds with big puffy gloves on.
With
you know?
Boxing gloves.
Yeah, right. with boxing
but
gloves.
But with those, on. They're puffy around the knuckles, but you can still grip with them.
You can still grip with them. You got everything. I mean, the only thing that's different is like the padding on your, like for like hammer, you don't throw them, but like hammer fist or your thumb. You got to be careful with your thumb. So you really have to be accurate with your punches.
Right. And with does it fuck with you if you're working submissions with the extra padding on the knuckles?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, rear naked chokes are harder to get the hand behind the head, and guys can get out of submissions easier because they can grab more of the glove, even though they're not supposed to.
Can I say something real quick? Because TJ was saying, you know, spar is hard sometimes, right? So I try to have my guys, if you know what I'm saying, so sparring hard, because you do have to spar hard, but we would have them do that once a week. But we do a whole bunch of sparring drills throughout the week as well to get better technically, understand the distance and the timing. But you do need to spar hard, but it's not like you're hurting the guy if he's rocked or whatever. You're not going to knock him out, but you're throwing with good force too, because you do have to experience that for sure.
If he's rocked, you just hit him to the body.
Yeah, you know, correct. No, for sure. Yeah, if you rock him, then you know, hurt him to the body. And this is one thing I'll say: if you get hurt to the body, you know, work out of that as well. Don't take a knee.
Yeah,
but I wanted to make sure that was clear, because that's one of the things I feel I've been able to do is dissect the chaos of a fight and slowly manipulate it so we can actually understand the layers and get better at it. And that helped a lot with the actual drilling and sparring and then the fight itself. So understand that latter process.
Have you ever found any core drills or ab drills that allow you to absorb punches or kicks better? Is there anything that you've shown that have you ever figured out?
I don't know if it really helps, but we do it. I mean, we have our coach throws medicine balls against, like we're doing motion movements or doing on a bouncing on a tire or doing almost like a burpee motion or something, getting back to your feet and slamming like a big medicine ball into your stomach. I mean, I just think the impact without hurting yourself is going to help ultimately. And then just having a stronger core in general. I think core is by far the most important in MMA and jiu-jitsu and grappling, is your core strength, is how strong your core is. Is like, because I can go and lift weights, and this guy's going to be way stronger than me doing bench or doing deadlifts, whatever it may be. But we get on the mat, and he's like, dude, how the fuck are you so strong? I think it's all core.
It certainly has a lot to do with kicking power.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
It's so much of it. It's not just the legs. It's the ability to whip the hips into it. All this. That's all your core.
And your cardio. It controls your breathing. I believe core is everything.
What kind of exercises are you doing for that?
This is endless. I mean, a lot of medicine ball stuff.
Are you doing different things with Mr. Calavita than you were doing before?
Yes. Yeah, completely. Actually, this shit's crazy.
Yeah?
It's straight up crazy, man. Like, the first time I showed up, like, I knew it was going to be hard. Like, everyone was telling me, like, oh, he's like, you go hard. Like, I've never gone as hard as this guy pushes me ever in my life from all the years of me practicing or competing. But it you can only do it so many times. You can't do it all the time. And he knows when the next practice should be easier, or when we're going to have those days where I'm for sure going to throw up.
Right.
You know, or like what days I'm pushing the sled up the hill. We do a lot of cycling now. I mean, I'm on the bike constantly, but it's not only for low base. It's certain power intervals.
Are you doing distance, like actual bike on the road? Or
yeah, I do that too. So if I fight 25s, I'll be doing a lot of road work, running, swimming. So I'm pretty much to make 25s, I'll be a triathlete as well.
Really?
I'll be doing some Cameron Haynes shit. Well, I won't be running that far, but I'll be trying to act like Cameron Haynes to get smaller. But I think the bike work does a lot for our core as well too, because your core is not only your stomach. You know, your core is from your hamstrings up to your back throughout your stomach. It's it controls a lot. You know, so even doing the bike work is a lot of core work as well too.
Yeah, people don't realize that sometimes when you have lower back pain, it's because your hamstrings are too tight.
Yep.
You tell them that, and like, what?
Yeah.
And then they learn how to stretch out their hamstrings, and like, yeah, my back feels better. Like, that's what yoga's all about, man.
Hell yeah, we do yoga. I mean, everything. I mean, there's so much behind what we have to do.
And how long has this guy been doing this?
So Mark Munoz was his first project in MMA. He wrestled. So he was a wrestler, always been around wrestling, always helped Mark with his wrestling camps. His kids wrestle. He's got that wrestling mentality. But then he's just a genius as well. And so his first project was Mark Munoz when he was making weight and looking shredded. The Tim Boach fight, things like that. That was when he first started helping out. So that's why it's called the Training Lab as well, spelled with rain in the middle. Is because he was attached to Mark Munoz's gym and helping him out.
And Mark Munoz's gym, for people who don't know, is called Rain.
Yes, Rain, yeah. Yeah, and so I mean, it's funny, it's come full circle. I mean, Mark Munoz is the one that talked me into fighting. He's my coach at Cal State Fullerton Wrestling. And he was in the UFC at the time. He was my assistant coach. after I graduated college, like all bummed out. I didn't do like what I should have. And so I didn't feel like I was done competing. I started following Mark around and doing jujitsu and all this shit. And I was actually enrolled in grad school at the same time to become a physician's assistant. He pretty much talked me into dropping out of school and giving fighting a chance because he thought I'd be good at it. And now it's come full circle and now he's our coach again.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's got some awesome MMA flow drills. Mark Munoz, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's been good.
He's got wrestling for MMA.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just be like a
nice
awesome wrestler and come in and teach MMA wrestling. You know, you got to know how to punch. You got to know the jiu-jitsu aspects of it. MMA wrestling is its own sport.
Yeah, well, there's certainly rules that you have to follow that you don't have to follow in regular wrestling.
Yeah.
Things, you know, that's the case with jiu-jitsu as well. It certainly helps to learn jiu-jitsu. One of the things I don't know if you guys are paying attention to, but Eddie Bravo came up with a thing called combat jiu-jitsu, which is sort of an intermediary step between regular jiu-jitsu and MMA. And it's basically jiu-jitsu with bitch slaps.
Mm-hmm. Pancrase.
Yeah.
Pow!
Yeah. Yeah, but some of those bitch slaps, like you get with
people.
The palms.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Well, Boss figured out how to
do
it. Yeah. He figured out how to pull his hands way back, and he was basically punching you with his palm, where you could hit anybody anywhere. You could hit him in the forehead. You don't have to worry about your knuckles.
I feel like that's harder than my MMA glove.
Yeah. I think so, too. Yeah. I mean, you could really put a beating on somebody with
Boss
your palms.
Boss is an innovator, for sure. He's always thinking. He taught me how to think. How to be open-minded and figure stuff out.
Mm. Yeah, so here it is. This is combat jiu-jitsu. That's a guy on the ground, I think. I hope.
But see, now, that's one of the things, too, like how Donaher was saying.
This is a fucked up one to pick up, Jamie.
That's where the whole ankle attacking the leg situation changes when it's an actual fight and you have punches, right?
Yeah, jiu-jitsu is different.
You want to watch attacking those legs.
I mean, you open up things the same way you would open up things with punches. You know, there it is. Bam.
Is that one of my affiliate students from Montana with the blonde hair?
Wagner Roach has stopped quite a few people. Well, he stopped at least one person with just the slaps, but he's used those slaps. You know, and Wagner has he's got a big advantage in being a high-level MMA fighter as well heading into this. But the idea behind it was created by Eddie because he wanted to make it just a little bit more realistic on the ground, just add this other element to it. Because there's times where guys are going for leg locks, and you know your face is wide open, you're committing both your arms to the person's leg, and that person's in a position where they can just smash your face.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And if you're used to that in the jiu-jitsu gym where a guy can't punch you, and you just think you're safe, and you always practice in that way,
thank you.
Combat's jiu-jitsu is a real wake-up call when you're just getting fucking hammered in the head.
It's like our jiu-jitsu instructor at our academy, Sam Kutz. He teaches jiu-jitsu for self-defense, and then he asks you, if you want to compete in jiu-jitsu, then he teaches you different jiu-jitsu. He wants to find out, why did you come here? Like, you want to get better? You want self-defense? You want to compete? Because there's a different way you have to approach things, for sure. Which is why TJ can be on the same mat with regular students in my gym, because he's doing slightly of a different drill in combination with more contact than the average person, you know? So you'll get out what you put in.
And in your academy, do you have everything there? Do you have submission instruction, wrestling, or do you go different places for your jiu-jitsu? How do you do it?
The only thing I do not at my gym is my jiu-jitsu. I go to Gracie Baja in Irvine with Felipe De Monica.
Great spot.
Yeah, man. He's a straight-up ninja.
Man, he knows jiu-jitsu for MMA, just like you were saying. Mark Munoz wrestling for MMA, and I feel like I have striking for MMA. Man, TJ has a really good camp around him. I would have liked to be in his position now with the understanding of martial arts. I'm not gonna hijack the podcast, sorry.
No, you're good.
I'm just so happy for him.
Stop.
Well, it's his time, right?
I mean, like I told him the other day, we were texting about, like, damn, you were meant for this shit. Send me a sick ass video. It's like, dude, this is our journey, though, you know? Like, this is, I'm not doing this shit alone. If I was doing it alone, it'd be a lot harder. I'm not saying I couldn't do it, but I wouldn't be to this level. I wouldn't be who I am. I told him this is our journey, you know? I mean, that's why this shit works, because I don't have a bigger ego. I'm not like, whatever, you know, like, me and Dwayne really see eye to eye.
I want him to be the best. Yeah, I love
this
guy.
He's family now. So.
But it's so critical, the relationship that you guys have, because I think he can add so much in terms of what he understands, and your acceptance of him and your appreciation of him allows you guys to like fully integrate to this one project of TJ Dillashaw world champion, like making you the best you can be.
Mm-hmm.
If there was any sort of conflict or you got to be number one or you don't want to listen to him, I'm going to do what I want to do today. Like that shit happens all the time with coaches and fighters.
And fighters, and then sometimes you don't hear about it until after the fight. And you're like, what happened? I got to tell you, man. He wouldn't show up for training. He was this and that. Mm-hmm. He's got this new girlfriend. She's pregnant.
That's why I'm all in, because TJ's all in.
Yeah.
I don't have a vast stable of fighters. I have a few guys that float through my place, right?
Mm-hmm.
I work with them a little bit here and there, but TJ's all in, so I'm all in.
Now, one of the benefits of being in Colorado was the altitude. Are you – you don't think so?
Mm-mm.
No.
It depends where you fight.
What do you think?
Because you can train a lot harder at sea level. Your body gets a little more dense. Like the oxygen and your recovery at sea level is way better. I mean, when I first started going up to Colorado and training at altitude, I felt like my body wasn't recovering. I felt older, man.
Because of the lack of air up there.
Yeah. I think the lack of rebuilding myself. You know, we do altitude training. We do altitude. It's called AltoLab, something I breathe into at certain times, certain time lengths, different intervals throughout the throughout training camp. Instead of living and breathing altitude, I'd rather get the recovery and the hard training from sea level and then use the altitude to get in that hypoxic state. So the reason why less oxygen in the air, you create more red blood cells. And the more red blood cells you have, the more oxygen you transport. And so they're thinking if you go down to sea level, you're going to have more oxygen to transport. But your body hasn't able to train as hard and recover as it can at sea level, and then use the hypoxic state by breathing in this machine to get the red blood cell production.
Okay.
So you can get the benefits of altitude without having to live there.
What I had heard is that the best move was to train at sea level but live at altitude.
I don't think I don't think your recovery is good enough.
What about those?
From what my coaches told me, you know.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. It's been
it's making sense.
Yeah.
What do you think about those tents? Where like people sleep in those tents?
I've tried one. I feel it's hard to sleep.
Yeah.
So if you, because you're pumping it up, so it gets hot in there for one.
Plus, you start thinking like that scene in Psycho with the fucking person in the shower, surrounded by shower curtains,
just have nightmares and shit every day. But no, it's when you're not breathing as much oxygen, it's just you don't feel recovered and you don't get a restful night's sleep.
I see. You know? I see what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Now that totally makes sense. Yeah, you definitely feel the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And it totally makes sense that you would be able to train harder at sea level.
Mm-hmm. You can push your body to that super far extreme that you wouldn't be able to get there at altitude.
But if you live at altitude for a few years, doesn't your body totally normalize to that?
Yeah, but then I'll be fighting at sea level.
Right.
You know,
You don't know.
I don't know enough behind it. That's just what I was told.
I knew no matter where I'd fight. Sorry, Ninja.
Yeah, you're good.
I knew no matter where I fought that I would always be ready to go because I was born and raised in Colorado, so I didn't care where I was. And one of my goals was to get tired because I knew if I was tired, that motherfucker was dead tired. So let's go.
Mm. Guys like Colavita make my head hurt.
Dude,
he's
thinking
awesome.
Thinking about all these different things that he's got, you go on and thinking about all his – the planning that must be involved.
It's a full-time job. Camps. It's a straight-up full-time job. Like, even, like, the juicing I do every day. I mean, if you didn't do my meal prep, it'd be impossible. Unless, obviously, my wife was doing it all. But it'd be impossible to get all that done. You know, they're doing – it's so much.
And how many athletes is he working with?
It's a pretty small group. I mean, and it's growing now because, obviously, the name is growing and more athletes that we're getting along with.
Are you still doing it at his garage?
Yeah, it's called the garage. We do it at the gym as well, too, but there's a small group of guys that still go to his garage and do it there. It's kind of like our varsity team, I guess you would say, you know. Once you've proved yourself enough in the gym, you can get – that's which has happened. Guys have come to our gym. They've worked out with us. We've got along with them. They become like – you know, family, and then we bring him into the garage. So I'd say he's got, Cub, Juan, Aaron Pico, Syed, Spike. I don't know. I'd say we're probably got like 8-9 guys that will come to his garage and work out.
Well, that's a great group right there. Just having Aaron Pico with you, that's got to help. That's
future world champion, without a doubt.
For sure.
He's a savage.
Not only like how good he is technically, but mentally too. Like, dude, that fool's. I'm competitive. I go hard.
Yeah.
And he's to another extreme. Like,
really?
Dude, it's great. We do this like hand pedaler for distance at the garage. We're on a a decline, so we're downhill, and we're doing this hand pedaler for distance and how far we can go. Who gets to a mile first wins. And I thought he won the world title when he beat me. Just stood up like, yeah! Like pretty much what I did to Cody. Like yelling in my face after the fight, you know, like or after the hand pedaler that he won.
Wow.
And he's very competitive. He's very good technically. He's hungry. He takes no shortcuts. He was 21 years old and wasn't taking any shortcuts. Mm-hmm. I didn't learn all this shit till I was 30, and he's already doing it now. And he's a world-class wrestler, great boxer. He's working with Freddie Roach a lot. He's good, man. He's really good.
Yeah, and, you know, I think there's an actual real gift in losing his first fight.
Yeah.
I think there's a gift in that. You learn so much hype behind him, and he got cracked and submitted quick.
He pretty much got finished the worst you could possibly get.
Worst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his very first fight.
Other than a head kick. Well, I just mean, you don't really recover very good.
Not only did you get knocked
time.
Out, but you got submitted as well.
Yeah.
And
that's right.
And you did it in front of Madison Square Garden on the main card for your first fight ever. So he experienced like the lowest lows for his first fight. So now it's like there's no going lower. Like everything's skyrocketing now.
And everybody was so hyped up about him. There was so much hype about him, which is deserved. But it just shows you that everybody can get caught, anybody can get finished. And that experience, I think, is so valuable for him.
Yeah.
I really do. And that left hook that he landed in his last fight, holy shit.
That's two fights, huh?
Yeah, two fights.
Body.
That's two fights. Nasty.
It's murderous.
He'll find that body shot every time I spar him.
Jesus.
Like, obviously, you got to get ready for it and you can feel it, but he finds it every time.
Oof.
Yeah, you got to be ready. And then, you start worrying about the body shot and you're opening yourself up, you know? Mm-hmm. So,
Yeah.
He's good, man. He's really good.
That's one thing I feel Mr. Coker of Bellator does pretty well is gives people the proper fights to help build them up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Pico's first fight was a bad matchup. He just got caught.
He got caught.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah,
he got caught by a tough guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I love Coker.
Me too.
I like what he's doing. And, you know, I'm supposed to be somehow or another in competition with Bellator. I say that's horseshit. I mean, I'm the one who got Jimmy Smith hired. I was trying to get him hired years ago. And I love the fact that Big John's over there now and that, that Goldie's over there too.
Yep.
And Morrow, I love Morrow. And there's a lot of great fighters over there, man. I mean, I love the fact that Rory McDonald's over there, that he's a champ. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's one of if he's not the best welterweight in the world, it's him and Tyron.
Mm.
You know, I really think that. I really think
I got to practice that name. Sorry, okay. Tyron.
Just don't have an E on the end of
it. Yes, sir. I'm on it.
But if it's not, I mean, he's most certainly one of the best. Musasi, one of the best 185ers in the world, if not the best. I mean, they have, like, legit claim to world-class fighters now in at least two weight classes.
They got the banners, the fighter walkout. It's like old-school UFC.
I like it. Yep. I like it. I like, you know, that the fighters are having a good time over there. Mm-hmm. They're getting paid well.
I don't hear any complaints.
Yeah, I want it to grow, man. I really want it to be I want it to be, like, right up there with the UFC. I would love it if it was a full rival like Pride was.
Ah, yes. Man, I miss Pride. I love Pride.
And then figure out a way to do, like, crossover fights. You can stay in, in Bellator, build Bellator up as far as UFC is, and then have, like, this, like, oh, yeah, we're fucking better.
Well, look, man, those are big fights, like Canelo and Triple G.
Yeah.
Yes.
Look, if they had a Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor MMA style, if there was, like, literally a guy as big as
one. There were talks about that, right?
Well, there were talks about that for Floyd and Conor, but I don't think it was real.
Okay.
What I mean is, a guy who gets as big as Mayweather has gotten in the UFC and a guy who gets as big as he got in MMA with Bellator, and then they have some giant ass fucking super fight. This is enough for everybody.
Yep.
I just think for the athletes it's better if there's choices, you know, and it's good for you. It's not just choices, it's more competitive, and when it's more competitive they try harder to do a good job for the athletes, make it attractive to the athletes. Like if you're a football player, you can go to a bunch of different places to play, right? But if you're a fighter, you got like two spots. You got Bellator and you got the UFC. It's like there's two teams out there.
Yeah.
And I think that's unfortunate. I think it'd be way better for fighters. I don't think that boxing is a clean system, and I think boxing definitely has its flaws. In terms of like promotion and how fighters are treated.
Like why this fight's happening again with Triple G and Canelo when it should already been over. Like Triple G won that fight.
Yeah, but that could happen in the UFC.
Yeah, it does.
Bad judging happens all the time. There are some fucking terrible judges out there.
Yeah.
I mean,
we've experienced that.
Fuck, it's crazy, man. Yeah. It's crazy that no one's doing anything to fix it. There's people that have passed bad calls that should just be removed.
Yeah.
See, you don't understand professional high-level fighting.
There needs to be like a grading system. Thank you. If you see these judges and they've made like, look, this person's made like four bad choices, four bad decisions,
right.
Well, you're out.
I think they should go through a training course and be tested on it, just like I test my students for their ranking in the system, right? They should be able to go through this information and get better and pass the test or not judge the fight. Or let a fight go through and let some quality judges judge it and then test those results versus their results, right? How do they judge it and compare those notes to see? Because we're dealing with people's careers and their livelihood, and a lot's on the line with these people aren't making the correct decisions from their lack of education that they could definitely get better at. So it's hopefully they start
Oh, no, please go.
When they start pointing some old fighters and old maybe ex-fighters, retired fighters, as far as being the judges, but then maybe there's hold back on that from, what would you think?
Biased.
Being yeah.
Biased. That's totally, that's possible, but I think you're better off with those fighters and their bias than someone who really doesn't understand the sport.
Because they'll be afraid of being called out, too. If you continue to like see their decisions they're making, like they're going to be afraid to get called out for it.
And,
like
you know, that. Just don't have them judge someone who they have a close relationship with. Yes, right? If, like, Frankie Edgar is fighting, you don't have Ricardo Almeida as a judge.
Yes, oh, yeah. So, yeah, because he's a part of the commission. That's right. Yep.
You know, even though I think Ricardo is awesome.
Yeah, he is. The Henzo team.
You need people that understand martial arts. And there's a lot of the people that are judges that just have no background. Which to me is crazy.
Agreed.
It just doesn't make any sense. When it's not like there's a shortage of martial arts practitioners out there. There's millions of us.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yep.
We're out there.
Yep.
You could find us and you could get us to be judges.
I'll judge some fights.
Yeah. There you go, man. Yeah. I mean, and I think also, we've said this before, I'll say it again, it should be more than three judges. Yeah. There's no reason to limit it to three. All you need is two dummies and they ruin a fighter's career. Yep. You could get bad luck and have two dummies out of three. Mm-hmm. That's not hard to do.
Oh, yeah.
Two people really don't understand the fight. Mm-hmm. You need at least five, and I think we'd be fine with 10. I don't think there'd be anything wrong with having 10 judges. That way, if you really got a 5-5, that's a real draw. Mm-hmm. And I think real draws are real, too. Mm-hmm. Like, there's fights where, like, you go, Jesus, I don't know who won that fight. Mm-hmm. I'd have to go over that fight with a fine-tooth comb. Mm. And the difference, the distance between winning and losing is so close, I think you're better off arguing for a draw in some fights. I don't think there's any shame in that.
Yeah. I agree. 100%. I mean, if it actually was that close, like, why not it be, you know?
Yeah, because there's some fights where the guy gets a decision or the girl gets a decision, and you're like, how? Mm-hmm. By who? They both won. I mean, it's a fucking incredible fight. One person goes home a loser, the other person goes home a winner, and it's almost like flipping a coin.
Overtime.
When I used to lose fights,
Draw overtime.
Glory does that still.
I would just say I came in second place. I never actually lost. Try to ease it a little bit.
Glory does still the one more round.
That's right. That. Yeah,
that'd be
still
awesome.
Do that.
I feel like that'd be cool shit.
That would be fucking wild. If you guys
like, you're getting up there ready
there.
To get announced, like, I fucking won this one. You know, like, oh fuck, we got another one round. More. All right, let's do this.
Sweet,
you know,
we have a split decision. You're standing like, oh Jesus.
Yeah.
We have a majority draw. And you're like, oh no.
One more go.
The audience would go nuts, man.
Hell yeah.
If you had that, cool. Only for championships.
Yeah.
Like only it. For championships. Yeah. One more round.
Yeah. Ooh. That'd be cool, man.
People would start pounding on the ground.
Yeah, nice, yeah.
And it should be like a 10-minute round. It should be a 10-minute round, too.
Pride style.
Yeah.
Pride style 10-minute round was awesome for grapplers.
And the gloves, too.
Yeah. Pride gloves are excellent, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you think that's a big factor, right? The curve of the gloves?
Yeah, and my boxing coach, Trevor Whitman, is working on some kind of gloves that are eliminating the eye poke situation. I'm not quite sure exactly what he's thinking, but if there's anybody to do that job, it's him.
I love that dude.
He is why I'm as technical as I am, is from Trevor Whitman. He is very detailed.
One of the things that a lot of people were like, almost like wondering or down on him or trying to look for something to criticize was when Justin Gaethje knocked out James Vick, cracks him, drops him, smashes him, stops him. Everyone is going crazy and look at Trevor. Trevor just sitting there like this.
No, he knows, yeah.
He didn't jump up and scream.
Yeah.
He just had his arms crossed. And he's see if you can find that. See if you can
just
find the video.
He expected it.
It's kind of, not only did he expect it, he was like quietly satisfied. Mm-hmm. I was like, look at that.
It's like, a tyrant. After his title, just like
sort of,
just what I do. Just chill.
Woodley cried when he got his black belt.
That was
that?
Cool.
Yeah.
That
cool.
was crazy.
Then Thomas too. Yeah. A fellow fighter like that. That's awesome.
That's cool.
I mean,
that's direct
like,
lineage.
Wow.
That's cool.
Like that felt more to him than when. That's so crazy.
Yeah.
That would feel more to him than defending his title.
He's been world champion. He knows he's world champ. He's confident. You know,
without a doubt, one of the best welterweights of all time.
For
without
sure.
a doubt, he's. I feel like there's three guys in the running. It's Matt Hughes, George St. Pierre, and him.
He's just so athletic, man.
So good.
It's crazy how athletic he is.
And with Dean in his corner and with Duke Rufus and just – he's just coming into his own, man. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean – and people criticized him for the Damian Maia fight and the Wonderboy Thompson fight, but because those fights were boring, that's the way you have to fight those guys, period. If you want to fight Wonderboy, you think you're going to go crazy and charge at him, good luck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good Not a luck. Good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to eat some knuckles.
Yeah.
So going back to the training method, you know, and that's one thing. I wonder how much time Duke is spending with him and Dean is spending with him. Din Thomas, Din is spending with him. And then taking that skill and testing it against all the other ATT guys. So I'm just wondering how much class work he's doing versus one-on-one work, and then how much live work he's getting with the crew.
That's a good question. I don't think they're doing too much work at ATT because ATT is where Colby is right now, too.
So where's he, you know, where he's training at? I haven't seen much.
He did a lot of it at Duke Rufus. Okay, good. He spent a lot of time with Duke, but I don't know exactly where he trained his whole camp. Nice. You know,
I have questions.
Pettis said he was at Duke's.
He was at Duke's. Yeah, nice.
Good.
Well, he looks fucking phenomenal. Duke's figured out a way to get him to really conserve his energy and manage it properly too, because we all know that when someone's that big and that much
fast
muscle,
twitch.
It's so hard to maintain endurance. But he hurt Wonderboy in the fourth round of their fight, you know, and hurt him bad. Like, he carries that knockout power deep, deep into the fight. So he's figured it out. He's figured out a way to manage his energy correctly. And if you see the countdown shows, too, he's doing a bunch of crazy strength and conditioning shit, too, which I kind of think everybody has to do now,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's dude,
it's a real – we're going to ESPN. It's a real fucking sport, you know? Yeah. Like, you can't take shortcuts, man. This is a profession. Like I told you, my training schedule is a full-time job. It's hard for me to get anything else done when I'm in training camp. You know?
Now, when you're not in training camp like now, you're out of camp, how many days a week are you working out?
Lately – I've only been doing like my strength conditioning with Sam, so when I'm back in town a couple times a week, I'm going to go back out to Colorado and I'll spending every day at Duane's doing kickboxing. I'll probably start going to Gracie Bajas. And this is all fun. Like I'm doing the normal. I'll go to do normal class. Mm-hmm. Right now at Sam's, it's not like I'm peaking for a fight, so it's just maintaining my body and keeping certain things strong to prevent injury. And then I'll go to Gracie Baja and I'll probably roll some gi just to do it, you know, just to kind of stay active.
When you roll gi, do you grab the gi, or do you just try to do no gi techniques?
I need to get better at learning how to grab the gi. I just still do no gi techniques because that's what I've always do. You know,
I would never really use the gi. I hardly ever use the gi.
It's not my favorite,
but I wear it.
Yeah,
but I don't use it.
Yeah.
I just do no gi with the gi on, and they can grab me.
Yeah,
but I just do no gi stuff.
Yeah. And that's why you got to go in there for fun. You can't go in there like expecting to be great, because there's so much shit. If you don't know it, they're grabbing your belt, pulling you in certain directions.
Oh, this is crazy shit that they do. They pull your thing out, your lapels out.
And try to choke you with it.
Yeah, they'll pull the back of your gi out and wrap it around your neck. Like, all right, settle down. Mm-hmm. But I mean, for the gi competition, as long as that's all legal, that's great. But I mean, for someone learning martial arts, whether it's for self-defense or for me, what I found about doing gi is it really improved my no gi submission defense, because it was so easy to control me with the gi. Because if someone's grabbing your collar and grabbing your sleeve and they hold you down, you have to get out of things technically. Like if you get locked up in an arm bar, you can't just explode out of things. You have to figure out a way to like slowly, incrementally release yourself the right way and defend everything the right way. Because if you get too deep with all that friction with the, you know, that heavy canvas gi, they can lock you up, you know? You have to be technical in your defense.
I still don't really
It makes
care
you
too much
more meticulous about your submissions. Yes. Like, it does make you like hold, absolutely.
Especially defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to compete in jiu-jitsu, then wear a gi. But if it's for self-defense, then I would actually train with no gi.
Right? But if you're in New York and you're wearing a leather coat in the winter, dude, imagine what Ronda Rousey could do to someone who had a winter coat on.
Yeah, you're getting tossed.
Talk shit to her with a jean jacket on, bitch, you're flying on your head.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, you are.
Rolling with the typical clothes, though, right? Because that's going to be different than an actual gi, but
even
close enough.
But it's enough to grab.
Yes,
I mean,
sir.
You know, like if you're you could choke somebody out with a regular collared shirt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, you grab a hold of like a regular dress shirt and you get a hand in the lapel. That's a dead man.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he doesn't even know it. Mm-hmm. Just get a hold of that collar and pull that fucker in.
I'm done.
That'd be great. I mean, kind of like what you're saying, like changing who I am because of where I'm at in my life and my family now. Like, I wish I could train more outside of fight camp. I wish I had more time to get in the gym and train, but I'm like going everywhere, getting pulled in every direction, creating businesses to try to set up my future.
I know you got your seasoning business. I've used your seasoning.
Yeah, Flavor.
It's excellent.
Yeah, Flavor Republic. Yeah.
Did you come up with this on your own?
So yes, I started it because of my new diet with Sam Calavita. You know, I had to eat super clean. I wanted low sugar, and I wanted something that was low sodium or no sodium, so that when I'm cutting weight, I can still use it. But we make our own sea salt, organic sea salt as well, so that we can add it to when we want to. You know, so that because you need sodium, you need good sodium.
Yeah.
But when I'm wanting to flush the water, I don't use it. So.
Yeah, you sent me over a bunch of stuff. It's great, man.
Oh, thank you.
I used a lot of it. Yeah,
thank
seasoned
you.
Meat with it all the time.
Yeah. Well, I just used it last night. I mean, it's not like I'm actually into the company and like it, you know.
That's cool,
especially for wild game and things like that. It's cool, man. It's really, really fun.
Do you have a pellet grill? Do you cook with one?
I
of
do
those?
I have a Traeger.
Those things are shit.
Yeah, they sent me one of those badass ones.
It's, yeah, they sent me one too. A Timberline.
Yes,
yeah.
Dude, you got the meat thermometer, everything with it. It's
I love
sweet.
That thing.
Yeah,
I cook on that
the,
thing.
The
almost
taste
every
is
night.
The best too.
Well, it's all wood. It's natural wood. For people who don't know what a pellet grill is, and there's a bunch of companies that make real good ones. We have Outback. We have a Yoder that's really good. I had a Green Mountain Grill. That's a really good company. Mm-hmm. The Green Mountain Grills are very affordable too, and they come also with a built-in thermometer, just like the Traeger has.
Yeah.
What you do is you pour wood pellets, and these pellets are made, like, if someone makes a table like this, the natural the sawdust from an actual table is, they just compress it, and the natural sugars in the sawdust force it to form into these little pellets, these like little tubular pellets, and you could snap them with your fingers, you know. But they go through this worm drive onto a heating element, and it's just fire and wood. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. You're cooking your food with fire and wood. I mean, it's all complicated and electronic and shit, and it's all sophisticated and engineered. But at the end of the day, the result is fire and wood, and the food tastes like fire and wood.
Yeah,
it's natural. Fucking great.
That's why like they have different pellets for different tastes, and you can taste the difference. Absolutely,
I love pellet grills, man. It's cool. Such a big fan. It's such an easy way to cook too.
Mm-hmm.
And that Timberline just maintains its temperature perfectly.
You could start it with your phone.
Yes.
You can connect it to your phone. So if you want to heat it up before you get home, you can start heating it up.
Traeger has technology. An app. They have an app. Like, I was going to cook lobster tails. I'm like, I don't cook lobster tails on the Traeger. Go to the fucking app.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. It tells you what to have, what ingredients, how to do it, all of it on your phone. It's fucking incredible.
Yeah. I'll get you one for the house.
I'll take it. Heck yeah. I have room. Thank you, sir.
So you didn't get an elk tag this year.
Oh, man. Well, I have a I'm going with Chad Mendez for a rifle. But
where are you guys going?
Colorado.
Oh, all right.
I don't know exactly the area we're going. It's something set up through Fins and Feathers, his company. He has a guide service called Fins and Feathers.
Awesome.
Dude, he's living the life, man.
He is. He loves it.
Like, he even told after his last fight, he's like, I'm not fighting until next year. You know, it's hunting season, my business. Like,
hell yeah.
He loves it, man. He's awesome. He's
good
a good dude.
Yeah. It was nice to see him come back and come back with a beautiful knockout.
Yeah. That good.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's still one of my very close friends. And so we're doing a hunt here. In end of October for rifle, but my love's archery. So yeah, I didn't get an archery tag this year for elk.
Can you hunt with your bow in during rifle season?
I think you can. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about rifle season is, though, you're dealing with they're not running.
They're not
anymore.
In rut.
Yeah.
Like right now, we had a video of being up in Colorado, like just 20 yards from two big elk fighting. They didn't even know. Like I was standing up. Or Leaster was standing up. Didn't even know they were there.
Mm.
You know, just 20 yards away. I mean, that's why that's why you get to do archery during rut season, you know?
Yeah, dude, I live for it. I love it so much. It's to me, it's like, it makes me so happy that I have my meat for a year.
Yeah.
You know, you shoot an elk, basically I have meat for a year. And for all my friends, now I've gotten all my friends, like Brian Callen and all these guys, addicted to elk. Tom Papa, I give them pounds of it, man.
Oh, nice.
Just constantly giving them elk sausage and elk steaks and... It's like once you taste that natural wild meat, you go, oh, man.
And just learning how much healthier it is for you, too, you know.
Do you feel different when you eat it?
That's all I've ever eaten. I grew up that way. So I grew up hunting because of my dad. My dad's been an archery hunter.
Your dad's a wild man. I met your dad.
Yeah.
You could tell right away.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, okay.
That's
how
where,
you doing, man?
That's where it all comes from.
Nice to meet you, Mr. Dillshaw.
Yeah, I remember that guy he's always been the baddest dude I've ever known. He's always just he's game. He's taking me on crazy hunts where we'll hike our ass off, go hike 20 miles and work really hard, hunt public land. Like, it's never been the easy thing. It's always been as hard as we can make it.
Nice.
It's made me really, like, fall in love with hunting even more.
Those backcountry hunts, man, people are starting to catch on to what an adventure that is.
Yeah.
And, you know, these guys like my friend Aaron Schneider, who runs Cafaro's, one of the best backpack companies in the world. They make hunting backpacks and wilderness backpacks. And it's like you used to be able to go 8 miles down the trailhead and there would be nobody. He goes, now you go there, there's three tents.
Yeah.
You know, because other guys are learning how to do this too. And they're realizing this, especially high country mule deer, which is an insanely difficult animal to hunt because they're so switched on because every day they're running for mountain lions.
Oh,
every day is like, is that a mountain lion? Is that a mountain lion? What was that branch?
They're
now?
So fucking
fuck
smart.
Yeah. Sketched out.
They're so sketched out. When you get to a 5-year-old deer, you know, which is what everybody wants to shoot.
Okay.
What they want to shoot is a 4, 5, and older deer. Mm-hmm. You're getting this giant deer. They're probably 300 pounds. they have enormous antlers. Mm-hmm. I mean, mule deer have these crazy racks.
All knotted up crazy.
Yeah, all knotted up crazy. And they've been hunted since day one.
Yeah.
Oh, so
every day of their life.
Makes sense,
they've been 5 years. It's like a fighter who's been fighting at a championship level for 5 years. Like, you ain't getting away with no sloppy bullshit with him.
Exactly. That's a good way to put it. Yeah. That's perfect. Yeah.
You can't snap on branches and they don't notice you're there.
Dude, they fucking turn nocturnal as well.
Yeah.
Like, I went out 5 days before opening day and saw two 3-pointers and a big 4-pointer right in the area I'm going to go hunt. And then 10 days later, I go out because I missed opening day. But 10
too
days
late.
I know. 10 days ago, after, they're gone.
Yeah, they just go nocturnal, they hide, and they just realize that people are after them.
Yeah.
They've been doing it so long that hunting season is literally like factored into their internal clock.
Like their DNA. Like
they just know. Realize it. They go, oh, well, there's the people. I know what this is.
Yeah.
They go, I know what this is. Time to get the fuck out of here.
I'll eat at 2:30 instead of the regular. Yeah.
Yeah, they'll just, especially during full moons and things like that. It's really interesting, man. It's once you experience these, I mean, even if you're not into hunting, but I always advise people, just go hiking deep into the backcountry. Just take a 6-7 mile hike deep into the backcountry, and just it'll put it in perspective for you.
Like those 2.5 days I spent in Colorado, I hiked probably 20 miles by myself with no one, and I didn't get anything. I didn't even see an animal. I found one drop horn of an elk. I didn't see shit, you know, and I still loved it. I still came out. I was like, I'm glad I did it, you know.
Yeah.
Hiked my ass off, was out there. My cell phone didn't work. It's just.
When you go out there, do you bring a spotting scope?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you bring a spotting scope?
Yeah.
Spotting scope, binos, the whole
deal. Rangefinder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And are you looking at Google Earth in advance or?
I'm looking at, what's the app I use?
Onyx Hunt?
Yes. It's Onyx Hunt. Yeah. So you kind of like downloads the area where you're at. So then when you
shows you where's public, where's
and you
private.
Can even download the app to when you don't have service, you can still use it.
It
knows where you're at.
Right.
And you know, like if you're on private property, if you're on public land, it like maps everything out for you that way. So.
Yeah. That thing, that's an amazing app.
Mm-hmm.
But just being able to see the territory and know where the basins are and the ridges
water
are.
Water holes.
Yeah. And get a sense like, okay, what time of year is it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not just going out to get food. There's really like a science to mule deer hunting.
And what the weather's been like. If it's been hot, they're going to be high country. They're going to be really high if it's been hot.
Yeah.
You know, you want it to be like overcast and cool so they'll come out more during the day. Because they'll bed down. When it's hot, they bed down all day long. And that's why they come nocturnal as well, is that it's cool enough for them to expend energy to go get food.
Yeah.
To where if you go in the middle of the day at 12 o'clock, you have to spot them with your binos laying down and hopefully sneak up on them and not let them see you, or wait for them to get up and start feeding and then sneak up on them.
Now, when you go out there, do you have the creeks mapped out, or are you hauling in water? How are you getting water?
I'll always take those pills with me to be able to
purify water.
Purify the water.
Iodine tablets?
Yes, iodine tablets.
They say you're not supposed to drink too much of that, though.
I'm sure you're not, but I don't hunt 24/7. You know,
right.
I mean, worst case scenario, at least I'm not going to go out there and get Giardia and get lost. Like, I'm at least going to be able to purify some water. And I have a lighter. Well, I have a canteen, so that would melt. But anyways.
To heat it up?
Yeah, to be able to heat it up. But yeah, I know where the water holes are. I always know that. And I bring enough water for me to drink, and I pack it into camp too. Luckily, this spot in Colorado wasn't very far from where I had to park my truck. So I was able to drive in a bunch of water.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
with my dad, though, we hiked back in the Rubies like 20 miles and then hunt back there, hopefully not finding anybody. And like you said, you still find people.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have to bring the iodine pills, or we have a pump, and then
pumps are great.
Obviously, we packed in pots and we boil it and drink. Usually we boil it back at camp, but if you're out and about and you only have a canteen on it, you'll fill it up, throw an iodine pill in it, and shake it around, and 10 minutes later, you got clean water.
Yeah, you don't want any of that beaver fever.
No, hell no.
That
especially
Giardia
being 20 miles,
rough.
20 miles out. Think how bad that would suck.
Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's beautiful country, though, man. I mean, to be able to go out there into that backcountry of Colorado where there's no people, you just realize it doesn't even look real. It looks like, you know, you find like a mountain lake up there.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, this isn't even real. This can't be real. This looks like a movie.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, pictures you take don't look like you just come off the internet.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's cool. That's super out near awesome. You, man. I mean, you pick.
I don't ever hunt, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to.
Do you
I don't need
it?
To. I'm sure I. I have. I had some mistakes at his house for the last camp, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. We got this from the Kingston Coffee guy, right, Mark?
Also, yeah. We had both.
Okay.
Yeah.
What kind of diet
do
you follow?
I have actually, when I'm out in California with him, Sam's family makes me the same meals. Well, not the same. I don't know if they're exactly
pretty
the same.
Pretty much the
meals.
Same.
But I eat the same meals as him, and I usually eat pretty clean too. When I did my hair analysis with Sam, all my levels and stuff came back pretty good. I was pretty pretty baseline or healthy mm-hmm. for the most part.
Right. Are you training or just training people? Do you train yourself?
Yeah, I still train. I stay sharp. You know, I got to lead by example, and I love it. So, mm-hmm. so that's what I've done since I was 8. You know, starting with the Kyokushin Karate and just been on it since then. So,
man, when he comes out to the training lab and throws the gear on and holds mitts for me, Cub, Juan, like – he just did like 3 hours of holding mitts, you know, like he's getting a workout doing that shit. Yeah. Just the impact and moving.
Oh, yeah,
and,
of course. Yeah.
I don't just stand there either. Right? I got to give him the feel and the reactions and throwback. And mm-hmm. you know, I get to play UFC a little bit without getting beat up. So yeah. it's fun to still, again, live vicariously through these guys. But I still definitely do train and, again, lead by example and stay sharp.
Have you ever thought about one day, I mean, you're in a weird situation where you could potentially go to 45, and you could potentially go to 25.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could be champ, champ, champ.
My coach already, like, when I first started working out with Sam and I was fighting Cody the first time, he's like, I'm going to make you a three-division champ. It's like, that's our goal. I want you to be the first one ever to do it. Like, he's always, like, reaching for, the, you know, everything. And the way I know I could do it, too, is because I can pack the weight on with him, too. Mm. You know, I've gotten up to 158 pretty solid before I went down to 35s the first time.
Max Holloway, who's the UFC 145-pound champion, is a fucking big guy.
I don't think so big. Eventually, he's probably going to be a 55-er.
Yeah, I don't know how he does it. When they had to medically stop him from cutting weight to make 55, when he's a 45-pound champion,
oh, wow.
he started in at around 85 pounds.
Oh, Jesus.
How crazy is that?
He's dude, Ortega's 40- big too, man.
Big.
Dude, he's a big, big dude as well.
Yeah, these 45-pounders are... Yeah. Look, I wish there was a way to stop all this nonsense. Yeah. I wish everybody did it the way you're doing it, where you're just a little bit overweight.
Yeah.
Have you ever been heavier before where you had a cut?
Mm-mm.
Never. So it's always been your weight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and good thing, too, is that I always train at the weight I'm going to be in the night of my fight. So if I win at 135s, I'm going to be 150 when I walk in the cage. So I train at 150. When I'm going to fight 25s, I'll probably walk in the cage weighing like 140 or low 40s. I'm going to train at low 40s, you know, and that's why my camps are longer. I get in shape before I start my camp because I want to know exactly what that feeling is of what the night's going to be of being in the cage. I want to be in shape. I want my weight to be where it's supposed to be. And so it's like the same exact feeling for my whole camp.
It's got to be satisfying for you to have all these changes, take all these chances, go through all this emotional shit with leaving Alpha Male, but the results prove themselves that you were making the right choices for your career.
Very satisfying. You know, I'm building my own everything, you know. It's all kind of falling in place, and it's because I've surrounded myself with the right people. I followed Dwayne because I believed in him. I came back to Southern California because I believed in Sam, you know, and there's guys like Steve Martin, like I was talking about before, that made that possible, you know, and there's just like these, for whatever reason, this group of guys that I've just gotten around that's just very synergistic and it works, you know, and so that's why I've been really focused on, because I've been to a lot of gyms that are money driven or ego driven, and to make sure that's not the case. So you might be an awesome fighter, but if you don't have the right mentality, you're not part of the training lab. You know, you might be the best fighter in the world, but if you're a cancer, we're not going to let you work out there. And kind of really treating it like we're professional athletes. You know, I mean, I am treating it like we're professional athletes instead of before it was just a fighter.
Well, have you seen that really across the board? There's much more of an attitude of a professional athlete versus just some badass guy who wants to fight and kick ass, and you're seeing people approach it much more scientifically now. Yeah. How much has that changed since you were on The Ultimate Fighter?
A lot. When I first got an Ultimate Fighter, I was Alpha Male, and we sparred 4 or 5 days a week. And
was that 2012?
11. 11. Yeah, 2011, and then it aired, I think, 2012.
So you think about that. That's not that long ago. We're talking about 6-7 years.
Yeah.
So in 7 years, the sport's radically changed.
Big time.
Wow.
Big time. I mean, it's also because of how big how mainstream the UFC is getting. You know, mm-hmm. we're going to be on ESPN. We're on Fox. We went from Spike. Like, the more and more mainstream it gets, the more like legit it makes it, and the more legit it is, the more science behind it. The more that, like, why wouldn't guys that are smart as Sam Calavita go for football? Because there's money in it. There's like exposure behind it. Mm-hmm. Compared to when it was fighting, it was so raw and just like whatever. But
right.
Now I feel like since it's so legitimized, those smart trainers and now the guys that have been fighting forever are now coaches.
Mm.
It just makes it more legit, and you have more science and ways to train behind it.
Yeah, no, it's really exciting.
But it's still growing, and I feel like we're on the cutting edge of everything. Yeah, we don't miss everything. We don't miss anything. Like we're on the. This is by far, out of any place I've ever trained, the most scientific and smart way to train.
That's so exciting, man. Yeah. It really is.
TJ's got a bump in the martial art evolutionary chain as far as how many people were switching stances and having that fluid flow before TJ stepped in the cage. Not that many.
Not that many
He's
at all.
He's definitely leading the pack.
I mean, when Dom switched his legs back and forth. But
no attacks.
He didn't fight the same way righty as he did lefty the way you do.
Kind of like you've seen it now in boxing too, like
Terrence Crawford.
Terrence Crawford, who he'll come out orthodox because he's right-handed, but he's like, I'm going to do better against this guy southpaw and stay southpaw the rest of the fight because he sees that advantage and being able to do that. I mean, boxers used to say, like, never switch your stance. Your defense won't be as good. But no.
Make it that good.
Marvin Hagler used to switch all the time. You know, he was one of the greatest of all time.
And then, there's orthodox, there's southpaw, but then there's a whole world of things that you can do offensive and defensively during the change of the stance as well that people – yeah, so we'll, we'll keep those secrets under the cover. Speaking over the edge here.
It's one thing to switch your stance to fight better that stance, but then what about the strikes while switching your stance, you know, or – in those crazy motions where I'm coming this way, but you're over there, I can fight. It's almost like fighting two people at once.
Yeah.
Being able to create those angles and take advantage of them, and they have to do this slow turn to stay in their stance, kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, no, there's fantastic advantage.
It's a fucking matrix. I'm telling
you. It's fun. Gotta start mapping out the Kill a Shot MMA series and get a bunch of MMA flow drills going.
Hell yeah.
I'm really excited about the switch to ESPN, too. Yeah. I'm really excited about getting the UFC on ESPN, I think.
I mean, it's a big deal, man.
ESPN is such a huge venue for sports, and there's so many like just hardcore sports fans.
You know, when you think of sports, it's ESPN.
Sure, and you think of like sports bars that have fights on. I mean, if they have, they're going to have ESPN on.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just, I mean, so many people just they just turn their TV on, they put on ESPN, and that's like all day long. Real sports fans, they're going to get a chance to see guys like you, you know, real high-level fighters. And ESPN's also been putting on real world championship boxing events, which is very exciting. So they're, if they're going to do that, and then they're going to start putting on real high-level championship UFC fights as well, people are going to get a chance to compare and contrast and see, like, wow. I think that's going to open up a whole new world. I think Fox was great.
Yeah.
I mean, and all the but there's like, what is it, like 80 Fox Sports channels, and no one knows which one the fuck it's on. And,
yeah, there are a lot of Fox channels, right?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. I remember the first, years ago, one of my Japan K-1 trips, we went to a restaurant and they were showing some fights on TV and we lost our shit. We're like, holy shit, they're showing fights on TV. Japan's so cool. Now it's out here all the time. So, you know, thank you, Dana White, for Tito Brothers, you know, the UFC, for making it mainstream. You know, they and you as well, Mr. Rogan, for having bringing martial arts to being so popular it is now. It's like you guys have helped the evolution of martial arts come to life, and it's fun.
It is fun, and it's, you know, people are getting a chance to see where it's at right now, which I don't think, you know, if someone hadn't seen a fight like your fight with Cody, or your fight, your first fight with Henan Barao is a great example of that. Your second fight was really like a blowout. I felt like in the second fight, he knew you were going to fuck him up before the fight even started.
Got to evolve.
Yeah, he didn't evolve. But if you see these high level, you know, world class fights, I think if people just got to look at what's going on right now at the top levels, they'd get hooked, you know, real quick.
Well, I mean, you do a great job of teaching people, you know, or the commentators as well as people involved in journalists of MMA need to teach the average fan what to look for.
Yes.
You know, and I feel like you've done a great job. You've helped our sport grow because of that, of not only hyping the fights up, but making people knowledgeable of MMA, you know.
Well, we need to teach the judges.
Yeah,
they need to come to our seminar.
I haven't done the best job. They're out there still. I mean, I just don't understand what commissions are waiting for. I really don't. I don't get what's the holdup. Just these people are incompetent. Fire them. Get new people in. It's not hard to do.
Yeah,
I don't believe it's hard to do. I think a motivated person could fix the entire system inside of a year.
I don't feel like they're worried about their job. If they make a bad decision, like if I ruin your career, if I steal millions of dollars out of your pocket,
Yeah,
I wonder if they understand that aspect. You know, that they don't want people's career.
I don't think they care. They're just doing their job, and they think they're insulated from it.
See.
You know, I mean,
I don't have a job.
They have to be accountable because they have a name. You know, their name gets, you know, Adelaide Bird scored the fight, and you know, you hear that. So they're accountable somewhat, and then people hear certain names, and they're like, oh, not this fucking guy.
Because
you know that guy's given some shitty-ass decisions in the past, but
it's
not enough. And if you just left it off to, if you ran it through a computer and looked at all the bad decisions and all the judges that called these bad decisions and
rate them like an Uber driver,
you just get rid of them. Yep. Just anyone who just gets a D or below, just get rid of them.
Yep.
You really know anyone who gets below an A. You know, I mean, people are going to make some questionable, subjective decisions. Mm-hmm. Some people like a submission game. Some people like a striking game. Some people think a guy takes you down, no matter what, he's on top, you win.
Yes.
You know? Well, I feel like, well, they've said it's going to not matter as much now, but if you did a takedown, you have no damage. Like, it's like the takedown didn't even count.
Yeah.
Which I believe in, because, I mean, it's really who's winning the fight, not, like, the position we're in right then. Even me being a wrestler, like, yeah, I can take people down and just win from being on top, but that's not how an MMA should be scored.
You know? No, I agree. And I think that if a guy does some damage standing up and then you take him down and hold him down for a full minute but nothing happens, he did more damage standing up. Yeah. And there's a lot of judges that think that if you take someone down, you're on top, you win. And they can't think that way. It's just it's not wise, especially when guys are battling off submissions off their back and or getting busted up with elbows from their back. I mean – there's just – did you see Nico Price's fight where he won from his back?
He chopped up the foot and hammer fisted him. That was sweet.
That was from the bottom. Okay. Knocked him out. It was one of the craziest – that was cool. Who did he fight?
I don't remember who that was. Damn, I get excited so fast.
Yeah, he fought off his back, won by hammer fist.
Okay.
It's like we're realizing you're not really safe. And there's things that people can figure out what to do in weird different places.
Mm-hmm. Find a way to be successful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just, as much enthusiasm as you have about the sport and of you and myself and a lot of other fans, I want the judges to have that kind of enthusiasm as well.
Yeah.
I want them to go into these fights knowing what they're looking at. Here it is right here. Oh, like right before that. Does it show? Here, look at this.
Oh, wow.
From his back, hammer fists him unconscious.
Oh, wow.
Fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Never seen that before in my life.
Me neither.
And that's something that I don't know if you would see that in the curriculum or not, but... Definitely is an opportunity.
In that position, it's a good place to be.
When guys start seeing it happen, they're going to go for it more. Yeah. You know, you're going to see fighters go for that.
Well, the Travis Brown, you know, that elbow on from defending the takedown.
Josh Barnett, right?
Travis started KOing people. He KO'd Josh Barnett. He KO'd Gabriel Gonzaga. Same way.
Yep.
He flatlines people from that position with those long-ass crazy elbows.
Do you take different alpha brain than I do?
What do you mean?
You're sharp. I think you might have some stronger alpha brain than I do.
This is his job. His job is to know this stuff.
There is an alpha brain turbo that we're working
really?
Yeah.
Is it here now?
No, I have it at my house.
Was it just, a stronger version? Or?
Yeah, it's got some extra shit in it.
See, I was asking Aubrey about that a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Well,
our original alpha brain was giving people headaches. We had to adjust it along the way. Hmm. Some people... Aubrey says the weaker chain.
I was just going to say that, you weren't meant to take off a brain, you know what I mean?
Well, it's a dose-dependent thing, and it's also – there's people that get headaches when they drink caffeine. There's people that can't drink milk. You know, there's a lot of biological variability. Mm. But what this is a more potent version of alpha brain. We're pushing the boundaries a little bit. So we're going to run some tests on it. And so we've got some trials, and I've been taking it.
Nice. Send me a couple. I'll test it for you.
I'll give
you
a full review.
You're a fan? Yeah.
Yeah, it works.
It's got some DMT in it. A little bit of alpha brain.
You know what I really like too? I've talked about this before, is Neuro One. It's Bill Romanowski's company. Mm. He's got a great nootropic supplement. Mm-hmm. I like it too. It tastes good too. I drink the chocolate.
I feel like Bill Romanowski now, the way I walk around with all my supplements and stuff. He's got like a tackle box of them. I do, man. Like when I travel now, it's like I have a whole suitcase full of supplements.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Like no matter where you go?
Yeah.
So even if you're on like a couple day road trip somewhere, you're bringing all your supplements with you.
Yeah, or I have those divider packs. You don't have to have like three of them.
Right. You know? You don't fuck around.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Even on my hunting trip.
Really?
Oh yeah, man.
Wow. You're on a trip, you eat clean?
Yeah, I do.
I bust into those Mountain House fucking fettuccine Alfredos.
Dude.
Drink all those freeze dried. The farts are so bad though.
But once you've been like so clean, you know how it feels. Mm-hmm. And then after your fight, you eat like a fucking asshole for a week.
Yeah,
it instantly is like, dude, I gotta stop this shit. Like, I feel depressed. I feel horrible. Like, I gotta get back into eating clean. You know,
it's how much time did you take off after the Cody fight, the second one?
Food, nutrition wise, probably like a week, maybe,
went hog.
But even then, it's just like not the whole day. It's just like I'll have one bad meal. I'm like, oh fuck, I shouldn't have done that. I'm going to feel that shit.
What is it about it? Like wanting a pizza because you know you shouldn't have it. Like looking at that pizza, go, fuck it, we're going in.
Yeah. Well, now I never used to be a sweet tooth, but now it's sugar. It's desserts. Like, I used to be more just like, oh, eat more pizza, like steak, whatever it could be. But now, since I haven't been eating sugar, I want to drink a soda. I want a donut.
A regular soda.
Yeah.
When I drink a regular soda, the first thing I think, I can't believe people drink this.
Oh, yeah, I don't like regular soda. Like,
people are drinking this shit all day long. I don't drink it. So when I drink it, my body's like, what the fuck are you doing, stupid?
Like, I had a Mountain Dew after the fight. I felt hung over the next day.
It's weird how your tolerance drops too.
Yeah.
If you don't eat sugar anymore and then you take it in, the first thing that happens to me, like, I'll have an ice cream sundae, I just have to sit down. I'm like, ugh.
Dude, the sugar is the root of all evil, man.
Yeah,
it's so bad.
Yeah,
not good for the body.
High doses.
Yeah.
Like, you know, people that walk around with a 2-liter Pepsi and just chug it. I mean, how many fucking servings are in a 2-liter Pepsi? And some people drink that whole thing in a day. Easy.
Like, you see them truck drivers with the big gulps just going on everywhere with it.
Just filling their arteries with bullshit.
Black insides. Their guts. Sludge.
All that fat, gut fat, just the lower abdominal fat that pushes into your balls. Lifts up your belt. It's going to get another Pepsi.
Just so uncomfortable.
You know what the sodas that are, they have like the Zevia sodas, those ones taste good.
Those are really good.
Yeah.
Zevias are great.
Yeah. They're awesome.
I drink those all the time.
Guilt-free.
Yeah.
The difference between them and a Diet Coke in terms of flavor, I actually like them better.
Yeah.
When I drink Diet Coke, I'm like, it's kind of fucking chemical.
Tastes like chemicals, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas Zevia just tastes like a good flavor, but it doesn't make you feel like shit. There's no glycemic index. Like, there's no change in your sugar levels. You just taste good.
It almost feels like there's no sugar in it when you drink them. I know.
Yeah, this stuff, stevia, is an interesting thing because too much of it tastes like shit. Mm.
Yeah, it's got a weird aftertaste, right?
Yeah, it's so potent. You just need like a touch.
Yes.
But when you put it in your coffee, like, I'll put it in there like sugar. But then they're like, whoa.
Yep.
It's rough.
It is definitely.
What other stuff does he have you eating that you weren't eating before? Is there any like concentration on like different kinds of greens or?
Dude, I juice like crazy now.
And you're juicing mostly green stuff?
A lot of it. I mean, there's a
do you blend or you
no,
juice?
No, I juice. I do juice. A masticating juicer, a cold press juicer. Mm. You got to, because if it's something fast like a blender, it kills a lot of the nutrients.
Really?
And you absorb more of it. So even if you were just to eat this giant table of raw food, you would absorb less of it than if you juiced it.
Really? Why is that? Because it goes right in your bloodstream?
Something about how your body breaks it down. Yeah, so something about the cold pressed juice is your body's absorbing it more. No. So, I mean, that's like a have to. Even when I'm traveling, I don't have my juicer, I end up buying them, which aren't as good. But I have to drink some sort of green juice every day.
Mm. And are you taking it with any kind of fat? Because what I heard about, especially with vegetable juice, that your body absorbs it better with fat, like with coconut oil or avocado oil or something like that. Do you do that?
We do, yes. We have to do a certain kind of MCT oil. I take tablespoons in the day and then at night to help absorb. Not only that, but then the ubiquinol goes with it to help me like rebuild red blood cells and do a bunch of
things. What is ubiquinol?
It's also some sort of oil. I take them in a pill, but some sort of like oil that helps with the transport chain of I'd have to get Sam in here. He'd probably try to hold back.
I want to get him in here.
Dude, he'd be very interesting, but I almost don't want you to because that's where all my secrets are.
The thing is about secrets, man, there's people that just wouldn't listen anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
There's so many people that would listen, but they wouldn't really follow it.
But it's a full-time fucking job, though. You know what I mean? Like, you can't be lazy and do Sam's shit. Like,
I can't imagine how you could be. It seems like you have to be on top of it all the time.
I don't have time in the day to do all the shit that he has me doing as well as training.
So do you take the MCT oil with the green juice?
You can, or just take it.
And for people who don't know what that is, medium-chain triglyceride oil is derived from coconut oil. So it's the more nutritious form of coconut oil. So you can take it. What it was explained to me was that you're better off when you're taking something that's as nutrient-dense as juice, cold-pressed juice, that you really should take it with a fat, and then it'll help your body absorb the nutrients better.
I don't know. He never told us that.
Okay.
But
maybe I'm wrong.
No, I don't know. I mean, he doesn't know everything. But
take kale shakes, I always add either coconut oil or I usually add both coconut oil and MCT oil to it.
I mean, I think that's not bad for you. So why not? You know,
yeah.
I don't know if it's better or not, but I know it's not bad for you.
Yeah. Now, what is your ratio like fats to protein? Do you know what that is, or does he map all that stuff out?
He maps all that out, and depending where I'm at and how my body's recovering. But yeah, I'm high fat, high protein diet, you know, low to no carb, obviously different kinds of carbs. I have to have carbs, but just like I won't be ketogenic, but I'll get my body into ketosis certain times throughout my camp to make me insulin like sensitivity high, right? So I'll eat like simple carbs that break down faster.
You know, they found that people, even on this carnivore diet, which a lot of people are doing now, they still reach ketosis. They still reach ketosis because they're not taking in any grain. They're not taking in any carbohydrates. And even though your body converts protein through glucogenesis, it converts it into sugars, into glucose. It's doing it in a very efficient way and processing in a way that a lot of these people are in ketosis all the day. Most of the time, just not the same, like high levels. If you were going like a regular ketogenic diet, I think it's supposed to be 70% fat or something crazy, or 60 something percent fat, and then the rest protein.
Yeah. Wow. Did you tell Jordan Peterson that? Isn't he eating all meat?
Yeah, he's eating all meat. I think, and I had his daughter on recently as well, and it's very controversial, particularly for his daughter, because his daughter is giving paid nutritional consultation, but she doesn't really have a background in nutrition. But she's just showing people what really has worked for her and her experience and her background. I think her and her father, Jordan, I think he has a serious autoimmune issue, like serious. And I think it's very possible that there are some people amongst us that are allergic to almost everything.
Wow.
They have allergic reactions to all kinds of different foods. And I think it's really, really rare. I think for most people like you or I, you're really better off eating rich, dark, green, leafy vegetables and nuts and fish and chicken and wild game. And, you know, I think if you get some wild turkey or some, you know, wild pheasants, and just you should eat really good, lean, healthy, real food. I think most people can eat apples and oranges and watermelon, and there's no problem. But I think there are a few people amongst us, and I think Jordan's one of them, where his body just fucking rejects things. I think he gets, his body has terrible reactions to all these different things, and going on an all meat diet has cured his depression, got him off on antidepressants for the first time in more than 2 decades.
Oh wow.
It reduced his weight back to the weight it was when he was 25 years old. I just don't think it's a viable or intelligent diet for everyone.
For the masses,
yeah. I just think it's a good diet for people that are very extreme in their nutrition requirements, because they have some serious autoimmune issues.
If you have autoimmune issues, you should definitely go towards keto.
Yeah.
You know, Sam's gotten rid of my psoriasis. I didn't even know you could get rid of it, but got rid of my psoriasis with my diet. I mean, they say it could be from the stem cells too, but I believe it's from, I mean, I did so much stuff, but the diet, you know.
Well, I know several people that have gotten rid of their psoriasis through that. I think Jordan is actually one of them as well.
Okay.
He had psoriasis, and he also had some serious gum disease that he was having for his whole life, gone as soon as he got on this carnivore diet. And it's just, I mean, he's just eating beef. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, he drinks water and eats beef. That is it.
I feel like that's got to be bad for your, like...
You would think so.
Is that how Brock Lesnar got... hurt, right?
Well, I was going to say,
Brock got diverticulitis. Anthony Bourdain told me that sometimes people get diverticulitis from all sorts of reasons. From like eating, you could like have a seed, like a fucking, some seed from some plant that you ate gets stuck somewhere in your lining and gets infected, and you can get diverticulitis from that. Huh. He said diverticulitis can come from a lot of different things. I think Brock probably wasn't even chewing. Yeah. I think he was probably swallowing animals like whole.
My dog
out
that.
In the wild. He's like grabbing fucking gophers and shit and just chucking them down and screaming naked on the top of a hill.
Hell yeah,
that's sick. Fuck.
Yeah.
I'm really bummed out that the WWE ever had him. I really feel like if Brock Lesnar had just gone from amateur wrestling.
Dude, he was a beast in college wrestling.
He's a beast. Yeah. And if he just completely dedicated himself to mixed martial arts from the jump. I mean, he's already, look, he knocked out Randy Couture. He battered Frank Mir. I mean, he submitted Shane Carwin. He already has an incredible resume for a guy that was a WWE star, a multimillionaire star, before he ever fought his first MMA fight.
Yeah.
Just such a savage. It was just beating inside of his heart so bad that he wanted to do it. But came in and did it, really did it.
Yeah.
Lost to Kane. Lost to fucking Overeem. I mean, beat Mark Hunt, even though Mark Hunt says he was cheating. Seems he might have been correct.
Yeah.
You know, Mark Hunt went on a rant today about Brock Lesnar.
Oh, really?
Called him a cheating piece of shit. And
yeah.
He's mad that he's coming back to the UFC. And he's got like a legit claim. You know?
Yeah. For sure he does. I mean, Brock's only fought the top of the top. He's never fought like a warm-up fight. He's never came in and had a warm-up fight, you know?
I don't watch WWE, but they say he's shrinking.
Oh.
Yeah. They say
so USADA's about to come in. So.
He's already in a testing pool.
They're going to be knocking on your door. Oh, he already is. That's why he's getting smaller. They're knocking on your door 6 o'clock in the morning.
That was the problem when he fought Hunt, right? There was some stipulation where he wasn't going to be tested or something.
Yeah, there was some weird loophole.
Well, so he retired, and when you come back, you're supposed to go through like a 4-month testing before you're even allowed to accept a fight. Mm-hmm. And they waived that 4 month of testing, and they just started like, so he was getting tested once he came back, but he didn't have to have that 4 month of testing without having a fight.
This is from what
I heard.
USADA.
Yeah, yeah.
Boy, USADA's changed the game, kids.
Mm-hmm.
Changed the game.
Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
And I look better than I did back then.
Yeah.
I'm nice. Jack City right now.
Sam,
I'm feeling
awesome.
Better. I'm looking better. Like, it's awesome, man. I'm the professionalism that's going around, like, around our spots just, it's just made me continue. I mean, I've always been hungry, but the science behind it and me being able to go 3 different weight classes and it being real and just me being the baddest man on the planet has got me in, like, ready to go, you know? Like,
that's the only photos they have before and after.
Trying to find a better one.
Pull that one up again. I didn't see much difference there.
You missed the line. Pull that up, Jamie.
Anybody who stands or sits the way Brock is sitting on the one on the right.
You're going to look in here.
The way his arms are spread wide.
No matter what, he's going to be big.
Yeah, he's still going to be 265 fucking pounds.
Jesus.
Yeah. Okay, well, there you kind of get it. Yeah. Yeah, he's losing some size, definitely. Mm-hmm. But he's going to keep a lot. He's definitely going to lose a lot. The thing that's going to fuck with his head, if anything does, is when you are on steroids for a long time or anything that jacks up your endocrine system the way we're assuming he did, when it's over...
He's already gotten caught.
I'm trying to talk like a lawyer.
Sorry.
You're assuming he did. His endocrine system's got to be struggling. And he's 40 years old now. I mean,
He's only 40?
Yeah.
He's going to be producing nothing
but
estrogen.
He might not even be 40. He might be 39. Mm-hmm. How old is Brock Lesnar? But he's 49 or 39 in Viking years. The age different.
Yeah.
41.
Yeah.
Close enough.
He's got to get in now while he can.
Yeah. Know? Heck yeah.
So what do you think you did that elevated your testosterone?
I think my recovery, so not redlining my body all the freaking time. I trained too hard. Like, I always went too hard. I always wanted to do more. I'm an old school wrestler. Like, more is better. More is better.
Training harder.
So my recovery big time. Listening to my body. Your heart rate variability when you're sleeping, it'll tell you when you wake up how recovered you are and how hard you should push it that day. So being the CEO of TJ Dillashaw and deciding, say, if it's on the schedule, I'm going to go hard the next day, but I wake up not recovered, call everyone like, hey, man, I'm not coming in today. I got to go walk around with the family. I'm not training. Taking it off.
So you know by how many heartbeats difference? Like,
it's not the heartbeat, it's the variability. So sometimes your heart shouldn't just beat every second.
Mm-hmm.
It should be like 0.8, 1.4 seconds. It'll tell you that your central nervous system is not worn out.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're getting sick or you're overworked, your body will tell you from your heart rate that it's about to happen, you know?
Right.
So if you can catch it, and if you don't listen to it and you just keep going, like, you go down this deep hole that you'll never come out of, you know? But if you catch it right away, no matter what, your body's always going to do peaks and valleys.
Mm-hmm.
But you want your valley to be lower and your peaks to keep getting higher. Valley low, keep getting higher. The way to do that is through your recovery, which is going to help your testosterone production, your growth hormone production when you're sleeping, as well as my supplementation, what aminos I'm taking and why and when I'm taking them. You know, the arginines, the 21 blend aminos, like, I take them all different times.
When do you take them?
Usually 3 times a day. Sometimes I'll take certain things at night, certain things in the morning, depending on what it's supposed to do for me. Like my ornithine, my glycine, and my tryptophan I take at night before I go to bed, because it's helped my testosterone, my growth hormone boost. Things I'll take during the day because it's better for my energy system, my ATP production.
So he's just got all this mapped out for you.
Yeah, man.
That's amazing.
Yeah. He's...
How many people could he possibly do that for, though?
He would have to teach other coaches to do it, you know?
Mm.
He'd have to do, like, a mentorship where coaches would come in and they would train underneath him, you know? And then hopefully stay with us.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, if you teach someone too much, they can go do whatever they want and they can have the science. Eventually, it'll get out to where you know, you're going to see the tests. You know, mm-hmm. you're going to see what he's doing, and people are going to want to come and learn how to do it.
And for heart rate variability, do you sleep with a chest strap
mm-hmm.
and a wrist watch that registers everything?
Yeah, you don't have to have the wrist watch on, but as long as it's close enough to register your heart strap.
What are
yeah.
you using? Which one?
I'm using Suntone, or was it Suunto?
Suunto,
yeah.
Oh, okay. They make hunting watches as well.
Yeah, oh, yeah. They make awesome hunting watches.
Yeah, the best.
Yeah, yeah. Like GPS trackers, mm-hmm. everything. Yeah. Yeah, I use one of those.
Yeah, those are great. Mm-hmm. And then, so what do you do? Do you take the data from that and you put it on a PC? Like,
he's got an algorithm. And so my watch is connected to my phone.
Okay.
And then Sam is logged in.
Your watch is physically connected to your phone, or it's through an app?
Through Bluetooth.
Through Bluetooth.
Yeah,
okay.
So an app, yeah. So that,
and so the app shows you.
Yeah, the app, I can put in my information and it sends it straight to Sam's computer. So every morning he checks in the morning.
So he logs in and gets your data.
Mine. He's got a list of people that he checks, you know, and depending where they're at. Like right now I'm not doing it, obviously. I don't need to track my recovery. But when I'm in camp, he's tracking my recovery mm-hmm. and he'll let me in the morning, like, look, man, you're 84% recovered. Let's pick it up. Or you're 20%. You need to chill, you know?
Right.
Like, you'll decide. So my week to week, you have an idea what it's going to be, but it always changes.
How many times do you think on these days where you looked at the results and said, okay, I'm taking the day off, would you have just said, don't be a pussy and push through this shit?
Oh, yeah. I would have easily. I mean, I don't feel that bad. Right. But then my next training practice, like, damn, I fucking feel good.
Right.
I'm primed and ready to go, you know? And so –
is it hard to do that? To
yes.
Take your foot off the gas?
I've always, even in the past when I've redlined my body and didn't know the science, I've been had to pull back. But now that I know it, it makes it easier for me to do it, but it's still very hard. It's still very hard to not do more.
Yeah. Like
my dad's taught me, work your fucking ass off. Work hard. Work hard. Work harder than the next guy, you know?
But work hard when you're working. But yeah. Knowing to not work.
Yes.
I think that applies to life, too. I really do. I think if you just burn it out all the time.
Just like I was saying, if like it was your sole focus was fighting, I would burn myself out.
Right.
You know, I have to have these escapes. You know,
yeah.
I have to be able to do other things. I have to enjoy family time. I have to go golfing. I have to go hunting. I have to mm-hmm. get on the lake. And even during fight camp. So I used to be like fight camp. That's all I did. Right. But now going with Sam and having these days off, I get to spend more family time. I get to actually do shit I like on certain days. Like I have 2 days off a week and we spread them out at different times. Sometimes I might have three, sometimes I might have more, depending if I'm getting sick or if I'm overworked. But I actually get to go do shit. I get to go wakeboard, you know?
That's nice.
Yeah.
Now, is there anything else that he's got you doing that's weird? That we haven't, like, are you doing any e-stim? Are you doing anything?
I mean, it's always changing. We're getting really big into, like, the extra recovery stuff, the cryos, the light therapy, the CVAC machines, hyperbaric chambers, when to do them, and how to test everything. Everyone has always known they're good for you, but I don't feel like there's been the exact numbers behind it, and now he's going to track it kind of thing. So we're getting more into that realm of it. I use an Alto lab that helps with me getting my hypoxic state to do altitude training to where I'm breathing in that for an hour a day. And that's, you know, I'm going anywhere to like 40,000 feet, you know, but there's only like certain like lengths you could do it for.
Mm.
And you have to take like for instance, like doing like 6 minutes on, 4 minutes off, or 3 minutes on, three, like in tracking what my body's doing the next day. What else we're doing? Obviously my diet, my supplementation we talked about. I mean, just the crazy workout stuff he's got us doing too, you know? Like I said, it's kind of like Rocky training, but it's a shit ton of core work. And his warm-up is not a warm-up. His warm-up is usually everyone else's workout. He's pushing us to our lactate threshold to where like you want to throw up, you're done. And then we're doing muscular endurance. You know, so
Wow. We're
not doing any kind of strengthening until I've pushed that limit. So maybe I've hit hard ground and pound. You know, when you stand up and you have muscle pump and you can't go,
mm-hmm.
you don't have that anymore because you're used to your lactate threshold is higher now. So If my lactate threshold is higher, then I'm not going to be able to push myself to where I have that pump, you know. And so get to that point so you know what it feels like. Right. So mentally, if I ever get to that point in a fight, I'll be okay because I've been there, as well as when you get there and you work out past it a smart way. Then it's going to increase your lactate threshold, and your lactate it'll take you longer to get to that point.
So when you're doing strength and conditioning work, you're mm-hmm. you're exhausting yourself before you're doing strength work?
Not always, but yes, yeah. Some workouts aren't as hard as others, but yeah, the ones that were like what I said, the hardest I've ever worked out in my entire life was that kind of shit.
Wow.
Yeah, to where you think like even especially like when I first started doing it, be like, all right, nice, that was a good workout, dude, good job. All right, warm up's over. Let's hit the garage. We're lifting, you know,
like, or
we're hitting the pool.
No.
We're swimming. So yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, he's rough, dude.
But now,
my girl just called me. I need to go, Coach Sam.
Yeah. No. Oh, yeah, saying you're yeah. Every yeah. time I drive up the street, the like I know it's string conditioning day, and I always pull up, and like I see the stop sign right before I turn left to get to his house. I'm like, fuck, I could just keep going. You know, like I don't have to turn left. I don't have to go do this shit. You know, but if you're in the garage and you continue to come back, you're a sicko. You know, you like this shit.
Now, how do you organize that, strength and conditioning days, and what precedent, like how, what importance does strength and conditioning take over skill work? Like, and how do you organize that?
That's something that still is always going to have to be developed depending on person to person, who needs more skill, right? Mm-hmm. And who's, obviously you never have it completely, but some people need more skill training than others. And if you're getting in there, like when I first started MMA, I probably shouldn't have done strength and conditioning for a year and a half. I should have only done skill because I needed to catch up. But I'm to the point now where each camp changes with technique, and I'm obviously going to continue to grow. And that's why my camps are so long. I'll do more skill outside of camp time and more getting my body ready. I don't know if I'm answering your question, but
no, you are. It's just
it always changes.
You don't want to burn yourself out that hard and then spar.
That's right? Still something I feel like we're even learning with Sam still too. Like, he obviously is a wrestler, and he knows training, and he knows strength conditioning, and that's why we listen to our heart rate, and that's why every coach is – and that's the thing, too, is that at our team, every coach is going to talk to each other. They're all on the same page. We know – like, they know what days are going to be off. Like, no one's going to show up to the gym today. If they do, we're going to go light because we pushed it yesterday. It's never going to be like the strength conditioning coach's job is to kill you. Now you're going into wrestling, he's going to kill you, too. Like, we're all on the same schedule, so that we know that maybe Wednesdays are our active recovery. So if you're going to go into practice, you're just drilling, you're moving light, you're not going hard because you got killed the day before.
Mm.
So when you're at your peak as hardest days, your next day is either off or an active rest day. Do yoga. Go do some yoga. Get your mind off it, you know.
And does he have your weeks planned out in advance, or does he doing it day to day? Like, how's he... When do you know what you're going to be doing?
I don't know, but he does. Knows. He plans out everything in advance, and obviously
the whole camp,
my whole life for him. Camp doesn't, dude. He's like my life coach, man. Like, even after this fight, he's like, all right, let's not change the diet. I don't want just rice is coming back. I don't want to have to work from ground zero. I want to like stay this. We can keep building. So he's like my life coach, you know. Like, I feel like I'm cheating on him when I'm eating a cheeseburger with buns on it, you know. But
that's funny.
He's got the whole camp planned out. My whole just continuing to grow, and obviously it'll vary depending on my recovery. Yeah.
Now with this ESPN deal, I know they're planning on some pretty big events, right? Mm-hmm. Have they talked to you about fighting on ESPN?
Not yet. No. I mean, obviously being a champ, you want to be pay-per-view though. Yeah. You know?
Right. That's where the Kiz Ash is at.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, that's what it comes down to. You're betting on yourself. You know, mm-hmm. when you fight live TV, it's you get a lot of viewers, you build your name.
Right.
But when you have these pay-per-views, you're betting on that people want to watch you because you're right. You know? And I've just continued to fight my fucking ass off and go ham. You know, that's going to be my style. I'm always going to go pedal to the metal when I fight, looking for knockouts, because that's my entertaining. That's how I'm entertaining. Like, yeah, sure, I'll maybe talk confidence and talk trash. I'm going to fuck you up, you know? But I'm not going to go out and be the Colby's, you know? I'm not going to go crazy. That's my personality. I want to be able to look, I mean, I know it's fun, it's awesome, we like those guys, but I want to be able to look back on my career and like show my kid, like, look, that's who I was. Like, I fucking stay myself, I stay my true color. I'm an open fucking book. I tell whatever it is, you know. Right. But I want it to be like the Chuck Liddell days. You step out there and fucking knock someone out, you get love for it, you know. Like the real kind of gladiator shit.
Well, it's definitely building for you now. You know, I mean, there was a lot of negative energy that was coming your way when you left Alpha Male and when you were on the Ultimate Fighter. There was some negative shit that was coming your way, but it seems like with every victory, like, all that stuff's going behind you, and now it's really obvious you made the right choice. And now knocking Cody out twice in a row.
Yeah, I didn't want to do the Ultimate Fighter. They asked me, he's like, hey, so I was like, I want my fucking title fight. Like, I've been needing it for a while, you know. I've been begging for it, and then obviously they're gonna give me Cody, be like, hey, we want you to coach the Ultimate Fighter first. So I was like, fuck, of course I gotta go coach against Alpha Male. It's like the last thing I want to do. I knew all this shit was gonna be fucking crazy. And so I didn't want to do it, but I wasn't going to say no, cause that's my shot at the title, you know? And, I'm fucking so glad I did it, cause I got to show my true colors. I got to show how much I care about the sport, how much I got to be a martial artist, teach the way that me and Dwayne kind of do things, very professional, let them be fucking assholes and then come around and have it bite them in the ass, you know? Like, it worked out perfect for me, cause we got to show what really is what.
It was a good opportunity. It was a good opportunity to showcase how to handle those situations.
You get to be your own judge. The more evidence you have in front of you, you get to be your own judge of what actually happened, rather than Uriah and Cody running their fucking mouth of me leaving, me being a traitor, me doing this, me taking PEDs, compared to what's actually going down. You know what I mean? Like, you get to be the judge yourself on who I am. You know, so the more you get to know, I mean, that's the way I should look at it. The more you get to find out about me, the more you get to know me.
Did you and Cody talk after the fight at all?
No. I mean, I should show respect to him. And, like, I never had a problem with Cody when we were at FML ever. Like, I felt like, I kind of feel bad for the guy because this wasn't any of his drama. You know, like, he was coming to the team when I was kind of on my way out. You know, he just started. I was holding mitts for him. He just got into the UFC because we didn't have a coach because Dwayne left, right? So I'm running the kickboxing classes. Dwayne left. I'm the only one left there to coach practices. So I'm holding mitts for him and stuff like that. And then I get the ultimatum and I leave. And then he becomes champ. And now it's like all this pressure from Uriah and Team Alpha Male to talk shit and us be the rivals of him was weighed on his shoulders. I mean, that fucking sucks. I mean, I feel like that's a big flag to have to carry rather than just carry your own flag.
Yeah.
You know, carry what you care about. Carry your own fucking flag. Right. Instead of like, damn, I got all my team that are on my back. Like, that's a lot of pressure, you know?
Yeah, I think for him, like, he really felt like that team and that family environment is what he needed. That it really, I mean, he said Alpha Male saved his life. It meant a lot to him.
Yeah. And where he should have thought that martial arts saved your life.
Nice.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, the team, it's awesome having a team. It's having, like, even like we have a team now. I say be individualized, but it's really good to have a team because you guys are going through the same shit together. It's good to have friends that are doing the same shit. Like, I can't only have average Joe friends because they don't know what it is to be me. They don't know what should I have to do to be the world champion. So it's good to have those guys around you. But really, you got to know that martial arts is what's going to steer you in the right direction. If I wouldn't have had wrestling, if I wouldn't have went to college with wrestling, I would have fucking fucked shit up. You know, I just had that personality. Like, I'm really glad that wrestling kept me grounded. And then getting into martial arts, and I'm a very addictive person. I mean, who knows what I'd be addicted to if it wasn't martial arts.
I'm exactly the same way.
You know? At least I've found the right things to be addicted to.
I think that's important for so many kids. I think there's so many young kids that are growing up and they have all this angst and, you know, their bodies are anxious and they're filled with fucking testosterone and they just, the kids want to break things. I think if you could focus that into wrestling or
instead of giving them Ritalin, just let them wrestle.
Any kind of martial art, jiu-jitsu, something. It's just so good for their self-esteem and for just relieving that excess energy allows them to see more clearly, think things through better. Mm-hmm. It's just so good for them. And unfortunately, you're seeing less and less of that with people today. There's less and less martial arts in people's lives.
That's why I make a bunch of free videos and just lead by example. You know, like you asked me if I still train. Yeah. Hell yeah, I do. Like, I love this. And again, bunch of free videos and seminars.
You can find martial, like, it's easier access of martial arts right now. Like Dwayne's Online Academy, for instance. Like, you can get technique 24/7. Go do it in your garage with your buddy. Yep. Go hit a punching bag, right? Learn jiu-jitsu online. Like, you know, I'm starting my – even, like, the physical fitness part of training. Like, I'm starting my own academy as well online to where I'm going to teach you not only the techniques behind it, but how I get stronger at doing them, how I get in better shape, like a physical fitness part of it as well.
When is that going to be available?
Probably less than a month, hopefully.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
let me know. I'll tweet that. Let people know.
Hell yeah, man. Beautiful. Yeah, it'll be. I mean, you can get more information on it now just on tjdillashaw.com. But yeah, I'm going to start an online kind of. Meeting Dwayne not only coached me in the technique of martial arts, but, you know, the way he's organized everything, how he's learned from Boss how to organize, how to create a system. I've kind of done the same thing, you know. I've not only with just the technique, but the lifestyle, you know, and so I'm kind of running with that. I'm running with that and I want to show people. I'm not going to, because eventually I'm not going to hold back and have any secrets. I'm going to tell everyone everything, you know?
Yeah.
And I want to start a champ camp. I want to do like a very exclusive champ camp where it's like only 10 people can come and you come and stay with me, live at my house in Colorado, go wakeboarding. But then we also learn like the mental aspect of how I think to be a champion, how I eat, how the techniques, take them to Dwayne's gym. Like,
that's
what we need to do is lead by example, right? Help out. Because
then I can really feel like I can like let loose. I can like tell you everything to where like I don't want to tell everyone everything because I'm giving away my secrets. That's who I am. That's why I'm the best in the world. But I love to teach and I love to do it. And I feel like by giving them small groups and giving them some intimate time doing a real champ camp, is something I want to do as well. And I want to start creating this. And I want to create them in places where we can have some fun too, because I think fighting, you got to have fun in this thing. Like you were talking to Donald Cerrone not too long ago, and that guy has to have fun.
Yeah.
If he's too much into the like the professionals of him just fighting, then he's going to fall apart, you know?
Yeah.
And so I want to teach you that I do that shit. Are my recovery serious? Like my nutrition serious? Like teach you how I – everything. No secrets, you know?
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, listen, man, this sport is exploding, and one of the reasons why it's exploding is the guys at the very top like you that are constantly innovating and keeping an open mind and constantly improving. So you're a big part of the whole growth of this thing, man. It's awesome. Yeah. It's awesome to see.
Sir.
So congratulations to you, sir. Congratulations to all of you. Mr. Sir. Master Splinter. You guys are awesome, man. I'm a big fan of both of you. Keep kicking ass.
And, always.
Please tell people where your academy is in Colorado.
Westminster, 100th and Wadsworth. And we have a super seminar coming up with Sensei Basru and Trevor Whitman and TJ Dillashaw October 27th. And then we got the Killashaw MMA series coming out as well.
Your website is?
Bangmuaytai.com.
And
hell yeah.
And TJ Dillashaw on Instagram, Twitter, everything.
It all. Right? Just TJ Dillashaw. No nicknames, no nothing.
Beautiful.
Yeah, heck yeah, man.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Rogan.